We got some really bad news today. I couldn't believe it. Norm Macdonald passed away. He was battling cancer for about a decade privately. You know, he didn't want to make it public, I guess, because it's not who he was, and he wanted to just keep those struggles, you know, between him and his family and stuff. And I can respect it, but that to me, this came as a big shock hearing that he had passed. Norm Macdonald is a legend. And right now, people are posting all of these really incredible bits that he did. We actually just referenced him in this past week a couple times because of this bit he did where he threw back the social justice narrative in the face of these, you know, woke personalities. And it was brilliant. I mean, the dude had just an amazing way of delivering his jokes. There's a viral clip going around of the old SNL stuff that he did, constantly calling Hillary Clinton a liar. It's just so good. It was so good. So I'm sad to hear it. Rest in peace, Norm Macdonald. Major bummer, because we could definitely use more people like him right now. But, you know, again, my respects, condolences. Everybody's pretty bummed on it. But we got a bunch of very serious and important news to talk about. The craziest was this report that we saw the other day. Massachusetts has deployed the National Guard to drive children to school because their labor infrastructure is falling apart to that extent. In New York, they're apparently going to be shutting down maternity wards because nurses are all quitting due to vaccine mandates. We got another story about a lieutenant colonel who's resigning over vaccine mandates. And I, you know what? I think they know this is the outcome. They know that when they mandate this stuff, people just say, all right, I quit. We've known about the great resignation. Was it 41% of people are planning on leaving their jobs? Microsoft poll, that was from earlier this year, and they're expecting it to get worse. And then they go and do this. They got to know. They have to know. So now we're hearing that the courts in New York are reversing the mandate on medical workers that barred exemptions, in which case seems like they're hoping they can bring back some employees because they're driving them all away. But we'll see. We'll get into that stuff. And, you know, I didn't want to lead with this because I did it for my main segment, but probably one of the biggest stories of our generation is General Mark Milley engaged in... I mean, to put it lightly, I'll put it colloquially, treasonous behavior. He made secret phone calls to Chinese military to warn them about U.S. military actions, assuring them we wouldn't take action against them and that if Donald Trump intended to, he would inform them right away. He did this in October of 2020, before the election even took place. He had a meeting on January 8th where he called together a bunch of senior officers and had them swear an oath to him that if Donald Trump gave them orders, they would come to him first. Which is a military coup. That's crazy. So we'll get into it to the extent that we can get into it because, well, we're being joined by a Brit. Zuby.
What's up, man? Happy to be here.
Everybody knows you, but introduce yourself anyway.
Yeah. My name is Zuby, independent rapper, author, host of the Real Talk with Zuby podcast, coach, public speaker. I do a lot of things. People know me for a lot of things. And, I'm happy to be here, man. I've been in the States for about 6 weeks now. I think this is my 8th or 9th stop in terms of cities. So I got off to Hawaii tomorrow morning and many more stops after that.
You know, I got to say, I mentioned this before, but one of our shows, because you had this Twitter thread that had gone viral. And I'm like, very often we'll see a public conversation around some ideas that originated from your tweets.
Yeah.
Like you'll have some insight into a circumstance or whatever. And then all of a sudden I see everybody like piecing it together. Like you're the first one to the party. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it happens a lot. I've even seen a lot of times where I'll talk about something on Twitter and then I'll listen to the Joe Rogan podcast like in the next couple of days and, you know, he'll reference it directly or it'll be similar. So, I mean, it's crazy. I mean, my Twitter now is reaching about 5-6 million impressions a day, doing over 2 billion impressions a year, which is nuts. I think when people think of reach, they typically think of platforms like YouTube or maybe podcasts or even Facebook or Instagram. But in my case, Twitter in particular for me has just been really powerful.
Your music does well, but it's like you're a famous philosopher at this point, basically. No, but for real, when it comes to like something will happen in the news, you know, you're typically the first person to put the pieces together that I notice.
You know,
and that's why you have these viral threads so often.
Yeah, well, I think a lot about the human condition and why things are the way they are, why do people behave the way that they behave. So I think a lot of people view me through quite a political lens and sometimes I delve into politics, but really I'm much more interested in society and culture and human psychology, morality, all of that stuff, which leans into politics and it leans into religion as well. But really, I'm just trying to work things out, understand why things are the way they are. Why do people have such differing beliefs and perspectives on reality itself? And this has been going on forever. And I think with my background, I come from a particular perspective and set of experiences where I can see things from a lot of different angles. So for those who don't know, I was born in England. I grew up in the Middle East in Saudi Arabia. My family background is originally from Nigeria. And when I was in Saudi, I also went to an American / international school for several years. And beyond that, I've traveled to a lot of different countries. So I don't see things kind of just from a purely British perspective or an American perspective. It's just kind of a global lens.
That explains the no British accent, I guess, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
There you go.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, let's we'll talk about a lot of stuff. We got Ian hanging out.
What's up, everybody? Ian Crossland in the house. Good to see you, Zoob.
No doubt, bro. Happy to see you.
I am also here in the corner. I'm really excited to have Zuby. I just bought his book, Strong Advice, a little while ago, and I'm really looking forward to reading it. Haven't
Amazing.
Gotten to it
Thank
yet.
You.
But I shall, yeah.
Before we get started, head over to TimCast.com, become a member, because we are going to have an exclusive members-only segment coming up after the show. And this is where we can say all the naughty words that YouTube would ban us for. And there's a lot of stuff we need to talk about that YouTube would ban us for, because we are falling into authoritarianism. But so long as the platform exists, hey, shout out, TimCast.com. We've got journalists, we're hiring more people, we're doing more work, we're doing more shows. We're going to be launching these shows I keep talking about very, very soon. It requires developers to actually code the website, so we're going as fast as we can, but it's coming. In the meantime, when you're a member, you get an ad-free experience. You help support all the work that our journalists are doing, and you will get free member. You'll get access to the members' content, which is where we can have these uncensored, unfiltered conversations. So check it out. Let's jump into this first story. And I think I can just tell you the news. Massachusetts governor deploys National Guard to drive buses. All right. There's the story. 250 members of the National Guard are being deployed to support and assist local communities in their school transport efforts. There's two things I see in this story. One, yo, they're starting to deploy National Guard to, like, do infrastructure work. That's crazy. The second thing is, aside from the fact that it's sort of, you know, it's like a military move to support the crumbling infrastructure, our economy is on fire. I don't know about you guys in the UK. I know it's pretty bad, I guess. You were telling me a story about it was like really difficult to even travel here. But seeing this story just says to me, like, everything we've seen over the past few months with food shortages, labor shortages, this is bad. I suspect it's going to get substantially worse.
I just saw Butcher said that beef prices were going to be up like $2 mm-hmm. by next week, $2 a pound maybe or something. By next week, he said.
There was a period where it doubled. There was like 1 week where beef was double the price. Great Reset? What are we doing? What's happening?
Man, it's so weird, man. We're living in the strangest time period. And what's crazy is that all of us who are able to foresee some of these second, third, and fourth order consequences were labeled all sorts of names, right? So from the beginning of this whole pandemic situation, going way back, I was far more concerned about the response and the downstream repercussions of that response economically, financially, people's health, people missing diagnoses of other diseases, people's mental well-being, depression, suicide, effect on children, all of this stuff, a whole bunch of things I haven't even mentioned. It was obvious, right? I mean, if you remember back to, say, about 14, 15 months ago, people were acting like it was some toss-up between saving lives and saving the economy. When people were talking about the economy, they were saying, oh, you know, you want people to die, you don't care about grandma, you're putting money above people. That's what people were saying, because they don't understand that the economy is the people. If people aren't working, then there's repercussions of that. In my country, like the NHS, it was all save the NHS, save the NHS. I'm like, how do you think the NHS is funded? If people aren't working, then you're not saving the NHS. You're actually going to eventually bankrupt it. And it was already in a tight position before all this. But the thing is, when people are gripped by fear, they lose their ability to think logically and rationally.
Elon Musk tweeted that meme where it was like an astronaut on the moon and a comet rips through the earth, blowing it up. And then he's like, oh, no, the economy or something like that. There were a bunch of people who were posting dinosaurs looking up at the meteor coming down. And they were like, oh, no, the economy. And I'm just like, I see this stuff and I'm like, man, it's like you said, the people who can see down the road, who can see the second, third, fourth, fifth layer consequences to this are telling them, like, dude, you have no idea what's in store. And even right now, you know, we're hearing a story about the National Guard being deployed. Well, what does it mean when the government starts deploying military to handle infrastructure? You get dangerously close to such infrastructure damage that martial law is a real possibility.
I kind of like it though, in that I think that our National Guard and our military should be used to build the world. That would be nice, instead of destroy it for once. Like if we could build solar power, water, condensation on housing all around, you know, decentralized. So, in a way, we
did that in Afghanistan. Come on,
we built the nation through force, right? You know, just through like where it's wanted, where it's needed, where people need drinking water.
I hear what you're saying, but I recognize if they were like, hey, we've got a National Guard and we're going to do like fixing this road and, you know, fixing the pipes in Flint and maybe helping build new houses in middle America. But this issue is our infrastructure is crippled to the point where they're like, if we don't have people working, use military. Mm. Like I'm not going to pretend like this guarantees we're headed towards communist dictatorship or something. But when you get to the point where your military is being used for critical infrastructure, if that continues and more jobs are lost, which is happening, and more nurses are quitting, more doctors are quitting, how long until they're like, oh, they've already deployed National Guard for hospitals.
Yeah, there's
how long until they're like, okay, plumbing, how long until they're like the critical infrastructure of this country is being run by the military?
There's a big difference between using the military to do good and having no choice but to use the military because that's a deep spiral that could get out of control.
What's the proper role of the National Guard? I'm familiar with the term, but I don't know what exactly is its role supposed to be.
I'll look it up.
Well, so we National Guard provide – it's a simple way to put it, state army. I know that's probably offensive to maybe a lot of National Guardsmen, but each state has their own National Guard. They provide defense for the country. They provide support. They're deployed in riots and things like that. They're not supposed to – it's my understanding. I could be wrong about this because I was not in the National Guard or in the military, so you guys might know better. They're not supposed to enforce laws necessarily but provide support internally, whereas the Army, the Navy, the Marines, mostly external defense of this nation, they can't enforce laws internally. So
this says here, during peacetime, this is from military.com, each state National Guard answers to the leadership in the 50 states, three territories, and District of Columbia. During national emergencies, however, the president reserves the right to mobilize the National Guard, putting them in federal duty status.
Yeah, so we see them deployed for riots pretty often.
Okay.
Floods, natural disasters, they come out and they provide that critical support in major disasters. So I think it's fair to say that we're looking at an economic disaster right now. My concern is this is not a disaster that ends. You know, hurricane comes in, hurricane leaves. You got to fix everything. National Guard can come in, provide a security and assistance, and it's awesome. This disaster is being exacerbated.
Yes.
The mandates are expanding. They're getting worse. The economy's taking a hit.
Yep.
Now Biden's got his national vaccine mandate. I don't know if you heard this.
Yes,
in the U.S.
Yeah.
100 employees or more. People are going to quit like crazy.
Yeah. But the thing is, it's a manufactured crisis.
Exactly.
It's manufactured. When I say that, I'm not specifically saying that the virus is manufactured, but the response to the virus, none of this stuff is necessary. Right? It's not necessary, especially at this point, right? Where it's September 2021 now. We're not even talking February or March 2020. At this point, where you've got the majority of the population have already got immunity, not just in the USA, but in lots of other countries.
CDC study said 80%.
Yeah. And they're still just going further and further. I mean, you know, if you create these mandates, there's going to be job losses. Like, that's obvious. So I know with a lot of people don't like to assume bad intention. And people like to assume that politicians and the media, so on and so forth, are always working in the best interests of the people. But at this point, I personally cannot put this down to incompetence. I haven't been able to probably for about a year, but certainly at this stage, I'm like, man, there has to be malicious intent there because it doesn't make sense to me otherwise.
Maybe, right? You know, because you mentioned Hanlon's razor before the show as we sit down. Never attribute to malice that which can be explained by incompetence. But there's something other than malice or incompetence. There's banality.
Yep.
You know, so we often is, you know, dumb or diabolical, I think. You know, Jack Murphy. Jack Murphy, yeah. Dumb or diabolical. And, well, what about indifferent? What about you have a governor who's sitting there and he's like, all right, so we got COVID deaths. I don't want to take responsibility for this. Shut it down. It is easier for a politician to say, shut everything down. so that they can be like, see, nobody died.
Yeah.
And then when people are like, you're damaging the economy, he can be like, pandemic, don't look at me.
Mm-hmm.
If he says reopen like they do in Texas and Florida, what happens? The media says, oh, all those dead people are your fault, your mm-hmm. fault. So you have politicians who are just, it's the fecklessness. It's the, I don't want to be responsible. So if I lock everything down, you can't blame me for the lockdown. You can blame the pandemic.
Mm.
But if somebody dies, then they're going to blame me for not locking down.
Yeah. I would consider that incompetence. I'd call that incompetence, because if you are a leader, your part of your job is to lead and to make decisions and to have principles and to stand on them. So if you're not willing to do that, then you're not competent in that.
Yes, fair point. If you're incapable of assuming the responsibility of the office, then you are incompetent.
What if you're unwilling?
Then you shouldn't be there.
Like, same thing.
Why are you there?
Like, so
is that malicious? I guess is my question.
No. I mean, I think malicious means, you know, you mean to cause some type of harm or pain or suffering. But incompetence, I mean, incompetence doesn't. It can mean stupidity, but it can also simply mean what it says, right? You're not competent at this particular test. There are things that I'm incompetent at, right? I'm an incompetent ice skater. I'm incompetent
really?
At.
I can't
right.
believe
today. Right. I'm an incompetent skateboarder, right? Like, whoa. I don't know how to skate. I have no competency in skateboarding.
I saw you miss a few of those shots at basketball. I walked down and you like missed and I was like, oh, man, he's got no skill.
So incompetence doesn't necessarily mean, I think some people think it means like stupidity but it's really more lack of ability in a particular thing.
You could also have malicious people that are incompetent.
Oh, you can have both. Yeah. They're not mutually exclusive. Yeah. They're not mutually exclusive.
But, oh, dude.
But the way, if you look around the world and you see the way things are marching in lockstep, like how that can't be accidental, right? How is it that all these different countries, I mean, look at the Commonwealth countries, how is it all these different countries are doing things which, like, literally prior to last year were totally unthinkable.
Mm-hmm.
The cons, whether you're even from a simple lockdown to something as simple as a mask, like, this is unprecedented. When was there ever a mask mandate? When was there ever, like, lockdown was just prison terminology.
Right.
Like, we've had diseases, we've had vaccines, we've had all these things our entire lives, but all of a sudden it's this and it's that and it's that, and all these different countries are doing the same thing.
There's a couple things I'll say to that. Are you familiar with the concept of a standalone complex?
No, I'm not.
So a conspiracy, a group of people coordinate the effort, then take action, and then you'd see a bunch of banks get robbed, and you're like, what is this conspiracy? A standalone complex would be, say, you know, 50 banks get robbed in every state at the same time, and you're like, this must be planned and coordinated. Mm. But a standalone complex means that each individual took independent action that just coincided with other similar actions, creating the appearance of a conspiracy.
Which can be exacerbated by copycat crimes and things. So if one, especially with social media, if one person makes a bad move in a government, all the other governments are going to be like, hey.
Oh, yeah. There's definitely a lot of that going. I mean, I don't know if you guys know that the UK was initially going to take the Sweden approach throughout this whole thing.
Yeah.
Right? That was the initial plan for the UK.
Not.
Yeah. So Boris Johnson was not, the UK was never supposed to have lockdowns and mask mandates, all of that. And then specifically, there was a lot of pressure from certain people in the media put on Boris Johnson. And then if you remember, he himself got hospitalized with COVID.
Yep.
So he got shook. And he saw, that was when he flipped, he came out of hospital and then he started singing a different tune.
Let me say one more thing too, and then in the countries all doing the same thing. If you take away someone's knowledge of freedom, then they won't understand what freedom is. They won't, you know, I'll give you a chicken example, right? So we got these baby chickens. I gave it a stink bug and they just stare at it all confused. And I'm like, yo, your chickens eat the stink bug, but they don't know. No one's taught them, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when all of these countries do the same thing, it's because they sit there and they watch one country do something and they go, do what they did.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, often when it comes to chickens, I'll throw in some food object I've never seen before, and the seven outside will come and look at it, and then one will eat it, and then as soon as they do, everyone then's like, oh, okay, I can eat this.
Yes.
So probably a better example is business. As we're growing TimCast.com and hiring more people, we're running into these bureaucratic problems, and we're running into just general issues with running a business. And then it turns out the solutions are exactly what the infrastructure has provided. Like, why are there services that provide HR services? It's like, oh, because we encountered this issue, and that's why all the businesses do things this way.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't necessarily think it's a conspiracy or anything like that, or not to imply that you were saying it was. But to see all these countries doing the same thing, I think it's two things. One, they have no idea what they're doing. So they're simply like, I don't know, do what they did. And then the other thing is, you know, Well, I guess that's basically it, right? If they can't perceive of how to deal with this, then they just absolve themselves of responsibility, do what everyone has done elsewhere, because then they can act like they're doing something. Because you'll often hear from many on the left saying, well, we can't do nothing, when in reality, nothing is often the right thing to do.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. I think people have forgotten that an overreaction can be just as bad or even more deadly than an underreaction or no reaction at all. And I've been screaming for a long time that the consequences of the response are more severe than the consequences of the initial threat. I still maintain that position. I don't know exactly how you'd be able to calculate the total harm and deaths caused by all this, but these things have long-term repercussions. I mean, if you remember back to the financial crisis in 2008, there's still repercussions from what happened 13 years ago. That's what happened. And it would be extraordinarily hard to quantify the amount of harm and pain and problems that have come from that. But I think this is the same thing. I think literally 10 years from now, you're still going to have issues which originated, again, not because of the virus itself, but because of the response to it, whether or not that is intentional or that is a matter of incompetence or some combination. That's up for people to decide.
I got a story for you, my friend.
Let's go.
Let's talk about the future.
Okay.
From New York, NBC, New York hospital won't deliver babies after unvaccinated staff quit. Six maternity staff members resigned from Lewis County General Hospital during the past week, worsening an existing staff shortage. So you've got a labor shortage. Then they do the mandates. Then more people quit. Now they can't deliver babies. So let's hit on what the point you're making. First, this is what happens with the mandates. People are like, I won't do it. I'm gone.
Yeah.
You want to talk about the future? These babies, where will they be born? They'll be born, and they're going to be born in different circumstances. This will have a profound impact on this country for 40, 70 years.
Mm-hmm.
So I take a look now. We were talking about this the other day about these like these young democratic socialist types, these Gen Zers who are like in their 20s and they're socialists, and they don't care to interact in good faith on Twitter. Nope. You know, they'll say something like pronouns in the bio, right? That's, mm-hmm. Is that Zuby's razor?
Zuby's razor, yeah.
If there's pronouns in the bio, just yep. ignore it. Well, so I've tried in good faith interacting with people, and they'll say something inflammatory.
Mm-hmm.
I'll respond with a simple point, not inflammatory, and then they'll respond with derision and insults.
Yep.
And you know what I think is that these are the kids of the 2008 financial crisis. They were kids growing up at a time when their parents were hurting.
Mm-hmm.
And then as they get older, and millennials also, a lot of them, you live in this nightmare dystopia of financial crises and warped values, celebrities ultra rich for, you know, photoshopping their faces on Instagram. What values do you hold? And now they're voting for people like Joe Biden. Why? Because it's funny. You know, everything they said about Trump and Trump supporters is them. Voting for Joe Biden was the right thing to do because Trump was bad. But they accused Trump supporters of voting for Trump because it was a troll or it was a game. What we have now is a generation of people who don't care about the outcomes, don't have strong moral values, generally don't care other than, you know, I don't know, is it going to be funny? Am I going to troll somebody? Is it going to watch am I going to watch the world burn or whatever?
They call that opportunity cost. The cost that you of what you don't do because of what you did. Like if you choose to do this, all these other things that you didn't do have a cost because you could have made money or made things from all those things that you didn't do. The opportunity cost of the war in Iraq is now we have psychotic people walking around that think it's normal to be at war. We have the financial crisis, kids stressed out because their parents are stressed out.
They creating imagine that. Imagine growing up with like a Leave It to Beaver family. You know, you walk in and there's a big stack of pancakes and bacon and they're like, go to school and work hard, son. You're like, oh, joy. And your problems were mostly like interpersonal issues, but not my family lost their house.
Yeah.
We're struggling. There's homeless people everywhere. Now take a look at the kids being born today. Yikes, man. Fourth turning, right? Mm. Maybe hard times will make strong men and then we'll get a boom period in the next 20 years. Or maybe you're going to have a bunch of dejected, angry, dystopian babies who just want to watch the world burn, man.
Yeah.
A generation of jokers.
Yeah, I think a big problem as well, and I touch on this a lot, is I always say that in the modern West, there's something that a lot of people lack. And those two things are perspective and gratitude. Right? Because I was kind of having this conversation with Lydia earlier, which is that it's simultaneously true that things are going crazy and it's kind of scary and this is getting worse and that's getting worse and this is bad. But when you kind of zoom out on a historical level or on a global level, you're still like, man, we live on some fantasy island. I mean, just what we're doing right here is magical. Any of our ancestors would just see this. They'll be like, wait, how is my great great grandson earning a living and making money? He's doing what? He's talking on, what are you, right?
Microphone.
Like, what? Like the whole thing we're
writing
doing.
On parchment and sending it overseas by boat.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And there's so much opportunity. We all know we're all online people. We can see the sheer amount of opportunity that's out there as well is phenomenal. Like what I do for a living, what you do for a living, even just a couple decades ago, even 15 years ago, it wouldn't have been able to be possible in the way that it is now. So we live in this weird, I don't know the right word, juxtaposition, where simultaneously it's like, oh man, like this is really worrying. There's this moral decay. There's this cultural malaise. People are giving up their freedoms. People are wanting to embrace radical ideas and cause this division and whatever. But then on the flip side, you're also like, man, compared to previous decades and previous centuries, things are amazing. And you look around the world and it's like, oh wow, actually, you know, where would you rather be? You get all these people, man, the USA, blah, blah. I was like, okay, well, where do you want to move to?
Who was that comedian who was cranking in front of all those women he got in trouble for?
Louis C.K.
That's right, yeah. I'm pretty sure it's him. He has this bit where he's like, why is everybody so pissed off? Everything's amazing. Yeah. You got this thing in your phone. It can show you whatever you want. And people are complaining. And you know what? It was a great bit. And I think someone needed to just tell him about the Rat Utopia experiment and behavioral sync. Mm. Are you familiar with the Rat Utopia experiment?
I am. Reiterate it for me.
Simple version is this dude created the space where he put in like 8 rats or whatever, gave them unlimited food and water, and just that's it. They had a utopia. And then after a few generations, they started fighting each other, killing each other. They stopped reproducing altogether. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I think eventually it became the rat experiment. Some were called the beautiful ones. They would groom themselves to perfection and do nothing else.
Yes,
some became gay. And so this was the concept he called behavioral sync. Now the problem is, this is really fascinating. We had, Shane, who's writing for our mysteries show, and he does articles on the site, talked to Brett Weinstein about this. And Brett said that one of the problems with laboratory mice is they don't inherit information like wild mice and rats do. Every species inherits some kind of knowledge from their parent. Like I mentioned, mentioned earlier, I got these baby chickens that are completely raised by humans and they don't know to eat bugs.
Mm.
But if the babies are raised by the parent chicken, the parent shows them to eat bugs. So they're not getting access to that information. So it'll be interesting to see. I think we're experiencing some kind of behavioral sync, mm-hmm, where we've gotten to the point where everything is so good that we've just lost perspective. There's no struggle anymore.
We need resistance. Resistance is a natural part of reality, where if a tree doesn't have wind resistance, it falls over. Yeah. And if we don't have external resistance, the internal starts to resist itself, because we need resistance. That's why working out is so good. You need to force trauma on yourself, or it will be forced upon.
And that's so interesting. I mean, you have to, if you live in a country like the US, UK, Canada, and you're just decently well off, you literally have to go out of your way. If you want to be strong and resilient, both mentally and physically, you have to deliberately go out of your way to create hardship, right? Like, I'm really into weightlifting, powerlifting, bodybuilding and stuff. It's like, and sometimes I laugh at the concept because I'm like, I'm literally artificially doing stuff that previous generations or ancestors, like the concept of this would be silly to them.
Wasting energy.
Yeah. Like, and you have to do that, because if you don't, just your day-to-day life is so sedentary and so inactive that your body is going to go to crap if you don't actually create that intentional hardship. And I think, like, I mean, if you think of human beings, it's so recent and it's only in a certain part of the world so far where you can even, where you even have this luxury, right? All of our ancestors just to survive.
Right.
Like, what do we do if we get hungry?
Right.
You open a fridge, or you walk across the street, or you tap a button on your phone, whatever. And something just comes and feeds you. You can get all these exotic foods from different parts of the world. In the past, or even in other countries, it's like, you're hungry. okay, you gotta farm, you gotta pull out some vegetables, or you gotta go hunt an animal, chase. I'm sure you've probably seen these documentaries where people are like chasing one animal for like 12 hours or something, mm-hmm. and then they kill it. And I'm just like, that's more close actually to the human norm than the way that we live.
True. You ever read or see the Watchmen story, Watchmen graphic novel or movie?
I saw the movie.
So like Dr. Manhattan can see through time. Like he perceives time differently from humans. It's like nonlinear. And then there's that point where at the end when he's confronting the villain, you know, the villain was using tachyons to obscure Dr. Manhattan's vision of the future. And then he says, you know, I want to thank you. I've almost lost the joy of not knowing, or I forgot the joy of not knowing. Mm. And I'm like, that idea right there. There used to be a time where you'd grow up, not even that long ago, 100 years maybe, and you'd be like, I heard about in this one island, they have food. It's made of snails. And they take it and they put it in oil, and you're like, whoa, I want to try that. And so you charter a boat, and it takes 3 months, and you arrive, and everything's different, and all the clothes are different, all the food's different, and you're like, wow. And they look at you and they're like, your clothes are different, and you're like, wow. And you can go from Europe into like East Asia where everything's different. It's still kind of like that. Mm. Except when you get off the plane nowadays, what do you see?
Oh, McDonald's.
McDonald's, Starbucks, Gucci, Hard Rock Cafe. Yeah.
Dollar, dollar, dollar.
Homogenization is stripping away. You know what? Fine. You want to do all that? Then give me interstellar travel so I can go experience something new.
Well, you got video games. And that's kind of part of the problem is people are going in to the mind and playing all these games to create trauma and like exert effort and things. Mm. And I don't know, man. I think a lot of that might be tweaking people.
I think that's also why, you know, this is... I have no scientific background on this particular idea, but I have a kind of hypothesis, which is that there's a level of, let's say, anxiety. There's a level of anxiety that typically is deployed just in being able to survive, being able to get food and fight against the elements and fight against disease, you know, potential physical violence, all of that, which if you're living in a hard place or in a hard time, naturally gets expended bit by bit on a daily basis. And I think that part of the reason why you're seeing rises in even mental health issues and people saying, you know, I'm anxious, I'm depressed, all of this stuff, I think some of it stems from this energy or this anxiety building up and not being dissipated anywhere. I think it's also why minor threats get so exaggerated, right? Whether you're talking about the words or violence brigade, we need spaces and trigger warnings. And, you know, and if you, what happens if you misgender somebody? What do they say?
You got banned for it.
You're right. But what they say, you're denying my existence. You're trying to erase me, right? It becomes like, it's like, whoa, like that's such an extreme response to such a minor transgression. I mean, look at how we're responding to this particular virus. We know what the survival rates are in different demographics. Okay. But the response, if you were looking at this response, you would think that the death rate was like 20%, 30%, right? You'd be like, okay, this makes sense.
Have you seen the polls of what Democrats think the death rate is? They think it's ridiculously high.
Yeah. There's some people who think that, you know, there's a 50% chance, you know, you get the Rona and you're getting hospitalized no matter how old you are. You've got people running around saying, you know, I'm terrified, or, you know, I don't think it's safe for kids to go back to school. All of that. And I'm like, man, statistically, the flu is 2 to 4 times more dangerous and deadly to children than this virus. And nobody is freaking out about the flu. Nobody did freak out about the flu. And it's literally more deadly.
Well, to be fair,
okay,
the issue with coronavirus, with COVID, was the novel, meaning that with the flu, there's different levels of immunity among different populations. Mm-hmm. So this is why the flu pandemic of 1918 didn't affect China as much, because they had previously been hit by a similar strain. So when it came back around more deadly, they had some degree of herd immunity.
Yep.
With COVID, the fear is it's going to rapidly mutate. It's going to infect everybody to varying degrees. Mm-hmm. Might not be as dangerous for kids, but it could infect other people, because mm-hmm. it's going to sweep across, you know, hit more people. So we do see... I guess it's a fair point that in kids, we don't see the level of risk.
No.
Ultimately, I think the problem is whether or not you go through the data and you look at, you know, I think the death rate for COVID is like double what the flu is.
Overall, you mean?
Overall. Okay. Right. Not for kids. But the flu is, it's still similar with older people. Older people mm-hmm. are substantially more susceptible to the flu than mm-hmm. younger people. The issue ultimately is that we learn to live with the flu.
Yeah.
We look at the CDC study that says there's 80% immunity, I think. Mm-hmm. And we should accept that at this point and be like, okay, so we got something that's bad.
Yeah.
It's worse than the flu, mm-hmm. but we're not changing it.
Yeah.
Right? So how about we protect the vulnerable like we've been saying for over a year? Mm-hmm. We got the vaccine available. Mm-hmm. 80% of people have some level of immunity, the CDC says, and mostly based on the vaccine. It sounds like we did what we could do.
Yep.
And that's why I was saying earlier, maybe at this point, nothing is actually what you need to do.
No.
At this point, we need to accept like...
Just get back to normal life, man. You know, take people... can do their own individual risk analysis. I've been saying this from day one, right? I don't know each person's individual situation and family situation better than they do, right? There's been this weird notion of absolute strangers suddenly pretending that they care more about you and they care more about your parents and they care more about your grandma and your family than you do, which is utterly absurd. These politicians don't care. They don't even know your name. Right? They don't know who you are, let alone like your family.
When these people on Twitter refer to the unvaccinated as plague rats. And when they say things like, you're stupid, you're a moron, and they cheer for people like Joe Rogan getting sick,
mm-hmm.
you think I'm going to believe they care about me or anybody else? No, they don't.
Now they're coming out and straight up saying, you know, like, people should be denied health care.
Yep.
I think they are panicking. You made a pretty profound point a minute ago where you were saying that it's like genetically we're used to this anxiety daily of surviving. And now that there's no, it's like, wait, I'm supposed to be anxious about something.
It builds up.
And these people are, I mean, what else? They feel like they are, they're winning. They're doing something to succeed by this. It's something, you know, but maybe it is to do nothing.
I think you're right, Ian. And I think that one of the things that we're hugely lacking in the West, because we are so very lucky, like you were saying, is any kind of challenge. Mm. And Zuby and I, on the way down here, were talking about the men who fought in World War I and World War II. They're a different kind of person. We have had no such challenges like they had, and it's made us weak. Mm-hmm. It's made us afraid of things like words. It's made us angry when we don't have our conveniences. And I think that's probably the root cause of all of this fear of COVID. It's just inconvenient and scary.
And I was saying to Lydia in that conversation, something that is going on now, and this has been happening for a couple of decades, which is that instead of trying to make individuals stronger and more resilient and encouraging them to be, they just try to nerf the whole world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. So instead of saying, you know what? So take the madness that's been going on in universities for the past decade with safe spaces and trigger warnings and deplatforming speakers and this and that, right? The message should be, look, guys, you got to grow up. You got to live in the world. Some stuff is going to offend you. You're going to meet people you disagree with. You're going to come across stuff that are like, and it might be unpleasant. Deal with it. Get stronger. Expose yourself. Deal with it. Instead, it's like, oh no, let's wrap everything in cotton. Anything that could be potentially offensive or potentially harmful, they like that word, you know, push that away. Shield them, right? Put them all in a bubble. And then, of course, when you put those people out into the real world where they're no longer protected like that, it's like an immune system, right? They haven't built up that immune system. So when the slightest challenge comes out, they break down and they flip out and they scream and they call names. And it's almost like dealing with children.
Yeah, appealing to authority.
It's time for one of Tim's famous anecdotes.
Oh, boy.
to explain a situation. So when I went on Rogan's podcast last year when COVID, like it was, I think it was March, drove across the country, I had to get a COVID test because Joe tests everybody. And so what they do is they take some of your blood from your finger. The lady was trying to use those little clicker things. It's like a little red thing, and they put it on your finger and they click it.
For me.
And she couldn't get it through my calluses because I play guitar.
Yeah.
And so that's the example I'm using. For a lot of these people in these colleges, a lot of these leftists, the reason they're freaking out and turning, like you mentioned, like microaggressions into you're erasing my existence,
yes,
is they are so pink and soft that if they stepped out into the light, they would immediately, their skin would just start burning in the sun.
Yep.
They've not built up any resilience.
No.
So they want everyone else to,
cater to their weakness.
Right. Yeah. Instead of them, look, if you want to play the guitar, you play, you get blisters on your fingers. You rock stars will play until fingers will bleed.
Yep.
Imagine these people playing shows. They'd be like, just pre-program it for me because my fingers are soft and they hurt.
I ripped the F out of my thumb a couple nights ago playing the drums. That was awesome.
Think about that concept of a microaggression, right? In a society with macroaggressions, nobody is concerned about microaggressions. Go to any place in the world where people are actually suffering and striving for any type of survival. Do you think they're worried about micro aggressions. Like, you wouldn't even be able to explain the concept to them. They just be like, what are you even talking about? Right? Look, forget your nonsense. I've got stuff to deal with. I'm trying to feed my family. I'm trying to live out here. Right? You're worried about microaggressions.
Give us an example, a good example of microaggression for people who aren't familiar.
Somebody asking me where I'm really from. Right? So if someone asks me where I'm from and I'm like, I'm English. And they're like, oh, where are you really from?
England.
Right? So that would be a microaggression. Or even somebody telling me that I'm articulate or that I speak well could be considered a microaggression. I'd be like, how... Right? To me, that's a compliment. Thank you.
There was this viral video a while ago.
You do speak well. Thank you.
Yeah, right. No British accent. There was this viral video a long time ago where it was like an Asian woman jogging. Mm. And then she like stops to stretch and there's like a white guy and they start talking. And then he's like, so where are you from? And she goes, San Francisco. And he goes, I mean, like, where are you from?
Yeah.
And she's like, my parents are from Korea. Yeah. But the funny thing is like, considering I'm not a dick, when someone asks me, I know they're not implying I can't be a real American with some like, that's the implication, like, yeah, you can't be an Englishman because you're black. Yeah. That's not what they're asking.
Yeah.
They're just using an informal way to be like, what's your ethnic background?
Yeah.
You know, where do your ancestors hail from?
Yeah. They could phrase it that way, but I mean, you know, like, I look at my, I'm clearly not an Anglo-Saxon. So if someone asked me that question, the notion that I'd be deeply offended and then I'll go write some Twitter thread about what happened and, you know, as if I got assaulted or something.
Yeah.
Like,
call the cops.
It's honestly, it's embarrassing. And again, this is what's been happening again over the past year and a half is people now have this inverted notion that everybody else is responsible for your health. That's not the case. It's never been the case. You are responsible for your own health. Does someone else have a right to intentionally assault you or like try to give you a disease or something? No, that's a different thing. But go ahead.
Not in California.
California, the HIV thing
decriminalized that.
That's so weird.
Intentional spreading of a disease decriminalized.
Is it just HIV or is it all of them?
I'm not sure. I know HIV was like the big story.
Yeah,
where they were like, okay, if someone intentionally spreads it, we're not going to criminalize it.
Hey, California is backwards, man. California is so weird because it's such a beautiful place. It's such a beautiful part of the world. Wonderful weather and so on, but it's run by idiots. I can't mince my words. The state and a lot of the cities are just run by morons.
But is it incompetence at this point? They have a poop.
No. The copper industry is obsessively keeping those wires all running through the forests in California that are lighting the wildfire. It is intentional that they are living in a 20th century infrastructure with 21st century mindsets.
Here's the thing. There comes a point where it doesn't actually matter whether it's malice or stupidity. If you can't tell the difference based on the results, then I would say there are certain situations where it doesn't matter because the result is the result.
Right.
So if you cause that, whether you tried to or you're just so dumb that it led to this, you know, like if you're talking forest fires or you're talking like the mass homelessness problems or whatever it is, I'm like, you know what? It doesn't matter because this is the situation and the situation needs to be fixed. So either way, whether you're just incompetent or you're malicious, it doesn't matter. Like we need someone else there.
I agree. And that's why I support recalling Newsom.
Yeah.
And that's why I'm in favor of Larry Elder winning. Not because I'm a conservative. Larry Elder is fairly libertarian, so I can agree with him on a lot of those libertarian principles, even though I'm substantially more left-leaning than him on a lot of issues. But the way I see it is the system is so corrupt and dominated by a one-party rule across the board, getting anyone in there to challenge the existing broken power structure would be a godsend.
Yeah, you need to hold people's feet to the fire, right? People often forget that what their relationship and dynamic between the people and governments, state representatives, federal representatives is supposed to be. It's not supposed to, we're not in a dictatorship or a monarchy. At least we're not supposed to be. It's not just supposed to be you've got Supreme Leader Joe Biden or whoever a governor or mayor is or whatever, and everyone just goes with whatever they say. They're supposed to be representatives. And people often forget that we pay their salaries, right? The politicians are employed by the people. They're not running a business. They're not directly creating any value. They're taxing us, and our money is literally going to their salaries. And I think we forget that. And I think certainly they forget that. They get this notion that, oh, I'm actually just like a mini dictator, especially at a time like this where they keep rolling these emergency powers. And I'm like, look, that's not what their relationship is supposed to be. You see the same issues that can happen sometimes with police as well, right? Where that relationship is not what it's actually supposed to be, right? The role of a police officer is to, of course, uphold and enforce the law, but it's to serve and protect the community. It's not to threaten them or to assault people or to like bully people around and abuse that power. You know, okay, I've got my gun, whatever. It's like, that's not what that dynamic is supposed to be. So I think, I don't know how, but I think there should be like constant reminders of what, how that relationship is supposed to play out.
What's that experiment where they put all those people in and then they created like a hierarchy and they gave some people like they were the guards and then other
people. Stanford prison experiment?
Man, and it went crazy. Yeah. Like the guards started just abusing their power.
Was that a real true story
though? Milgram experiment.
Stanford, it was done at Stanford University, I believe.
Stanford was, I think.
Yeah, that's why it's called
Stanford Milgram experiment?
No, you're mixing up two. I think the Milgram one is the one with
the
shocks.
That's fake. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Stanford prison one is the one with the guards.
Stanford was.
Yeah, it's two different experiments.
I don't have all the data on what exactly went down, but I heard stuff went sideways.
Yeah, people went tyrannical very quickly to the point where, because it was supposed to be a role play, but it got to the stage where, you know, they were actually legitimately abusing people.
I love this idea. We hear it from the left very often where they'll tweet at you and say something like, you would have been on the side of the Confederates or you would have been on the side of the Nazis and all that stuff. And I'm like, there's this teacher who tells this story where he asks his students, how many of you in this classroom would believe you would have opposed slavery in the United States, you know, pre-Civil War in America? And they all raised their hands.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, okay, now name something right now that you will publicly announce that is deeply unpopular and get you ostracized by mainstream society. And of course they don't. They're all good little followers. And the point he was making is that, you know, in hindsight, we can look back and be like, oh, of course we're the good guys.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact is, it's typically the dissidents, the critical thinkers, mm-hmm. who are challenging the system. And today, that's not the establishment left or the neocon, you know, never-Trumper types.
No.
It is typically some of the Bernie people.
Mm-hmm.
Many of them are just towing the line for the establishment left, though. But a lot of the MAGA, a lot of the conservatives, a lot of the disaffected liberals, the intellectual dark web types that are thinking critically, challenging the current power structures.
Yes.
So if you want to, if you think that you can go back in time and you'd be some rebellious hero,
most people wouldn't, man. Most people are afraid to even use their real name and post their opinions on social media.
Oh, I saw you post earlier today how great your life can become if you expose yourself online and become yourself.
I was just saying that people miss a lot of opportunities by not doing so. And I mean, I think it's a shame that so many people live in constant fear. And people really, really get upset when I use the word cowardice. But we do have a pandemic of cowardice.
Yep.
We really do.
I'm doing jazz hands over here. I agree with you.
I always feel kind of weird when one of the things I hear most, and to me it's kind of bittersweet, is when people call me brave. When people are like, man, Zuby, like you're so brave. You speak up. You do it. I'm like, dude, I just say stuff. I talk. When I think of courage and bravery, right? If I'm looking at people in the military going and fighting on the front lines, literally putting their life at risk, a fireman running into a burning building to go, I'm like, man, that's like scary. Like that's actually risking your life. I'm like, man, I say stuff on Twitter. I make music. I talk on podcasts. I do public. I'm like, dude, like, okay, cool. Thanks. Thank you in a way. But at the same time, I'm like, man, I wish this shouldn't be that rare.
Right.
It shouldn't be that rare.
I want to shout out a handful of people. We got this story from TimCast.com. Comedian Jim Brewer cancels shows at theaters demanding proof of vaccination. The Saturday Night Live star Jim Brewer canceled his concerts, he's a comedian, at venues across the U.S. that require proof of vaccination before entry, becoming the latest celebrity to protest vaccine passports in cities like New York.
Mm.
Two quick updates on shows that you may think you may be getting tickets to or have already tickets to. The Wellmont Theater in New Jersey, not doing it. Also, the Royal Oak Theater in Michigan, due to the segregation of them forcing people to show up with vaccinations, I am also not doing those shows, added the 54-year-old comic. I know I'm going to sacrifice a lot of money, but I'm not going to be enslaved to the system or money.
Good.
There's a lot of comedians that won't do that. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of performers who won't do that.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of people who are just absolutely marching in line with these mandates because, well, there's money to be made. So let's talk about bravery. So you were just mentioning that, you know, people call you brave. I think what he's doing is brave.
Yeah.
And we'll talk about some of these other comedians in a second. But you were saying like, oh, come on, I just talk online and stuff, right? Let's be real, though. In the event that you get canceled, meaning like your bank shuts you down, like hardcore, like they've done to some of these people, mm-hmm. are you going to be able to get a job at a regular place?
Wouldn't want one. But yeah, but actually, yes, I would.
You think you'd be able to?
Yes, I do.
I mean,
I'm a very competent person.
But it's not about competence. It's about being a pariah. It's about them being like, look, you know, I'm a fan, but we can't deal with the harassment. Antifa would show up. And
see, this is further cowardice. It's cowardice at every level. It's cowardice at the employer level. It's cowardice at the employee level.
I agree.
This is the thing. So I've said before that cancel culture only works in coordination with cowardice culture.
Yes.
Yep.
Right? If people were a bit more bold and brave and willing to stand up for themselves and stand by their coworkers, their colleagues, their employees, what, you know, you're a business owner.
Right.
You have people who work for you, right? So if one of your employees, you know, if people started messaging you saying, "Oh, this guy who works for, you know, I don't like his tweet or whatever," you'll be like, you probably won't respond. But at best you'll be like, "What?" You'll stand by your person, and then they're impotent. They can't do anything else. It's like, okay.
I would say it's not so simple. Most people might assume like, mm. oh, we're here, great defenders that would never, you know, would never falter in the face of cancel culture. Mm. I mean, let's be real though. Like, you can't go on Tucker Carlson's show and say a bunch of swears and racist things. I use him as an example because he's like the biggest show.
Sure.
He's mainstream, but he's also fairly counterculture.
Yeah.
Like, absolutely, there are things that employees at my company could do that I'd be like, get out.
Yeah, of course.
But not these BS microaggressions.
What I'm saying, right? I don't think anyone, so the term cancel culture sort of gets misused a lot. Cancel culture doesn't mean that anyone should be able to do anything and there's never any repercussions.
Right.
Right. No, that's not how society works. If someone goes on some huge like white supremacist racist rant or something, right? And then they get fired. That's not cancel culture. Okay. But cancel culture is, oh, this person tweeted something in 2011. And we've dug it up. Oh, he was 14 when he tweeted it. And now we're going to like come after him and people actually cave to that. Or someone does something which is not even a transgression to any remotely normal and reasonable person. And then there, you know, a handful of Twitter people go after them or whatever and people start caving. So there's certainly levels to it.
But so the reason I bring up the job thing, like, okay. Do you think you get a regular job? I think that I've already seen it. We've already seen with many people getting fired over fear of, you know, like, oh, someone, you got canceled, you were tweeting things, you lose your job. So there are a lot of people that are afraid to be public figures in that regard.
Sure. They're
like, if I speak up, I could lose my job. And so there is, to a certain degree, bravery and being willing to be a forward-facing political figure.
Sure.
I will never get offered another job in establishment media.
Sure.
I worked for Vice. I worked for ABC News Univision. Mm-hmm. After that company, I got basically courted by a bunch of the New York media establishment, and I ultimately decided to do my own thing.
Yep.
That will never happen again.
Yeah.
Because of the things I've covered, because of the things I've said. I actually had a conversation with one of these high-profile guys a few years ago after I had been running my YouTube channel for a little bit. And I saw him at the airport on the way to Davos, of all places. And he said to me, "I'm not sure which side you're on."
Yeah.
And I said, "Telling the truth?"
Mm-hmm.
And then I asked him, I was like, "Why won't you call out?" I pulled up a specific story that was lies about Trump. And I was like, "Why don't you guys correct this stuff? Why don't you guys ever call out your colleagues in media? How come you just let it slide?" So if you're willing to stand up and say, "I'm going to lose money because I care more about my convictions, my principles, and believing this stuff," there's a certain bravery to it.
Yeah.
But I will just say also, there's also, for me at least, I can't say the same thing for you. Maybe you would agree. There's like kind of an obstinate personality trait where I'm just like, you're not going to tell me.
Contrary.
It's America.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily contrarian. It's like, if
he
I
just did it. She just said that. Yeah, you just
It's a level of disagreeableness.
It's not about being contrarian. Like contrarian in the sense where it's just like, if you say something, I'll disagree with you. If you're in the majority, I'll disagree. No.
You just have a disagreeable personality.
No. I'm saying if I believe it, I'm going to stand by it.
Yeah.
If I change my opinion on it, I'll explain I change my opinion on it. Mm-hmm. But if everyone in the country all of a sudden one day starts saying vaccine mandates and I'm like, I disagree. I don't care what the ramifications are. I'm not going to just pretend to agree with it.
Yeah. One day in the future, you should rewatch this show, and when we're all telling you how disagreeable you are, and you're telling us I'm not disagreeing with us, it'll be funny to you.
Yeah, but that's like a.
It's a good trait for a lot of people. Disagreeableness is a powerful trait.
I know, yeah. but that's not the point I'm making.
It's the principle.
Like the point I'm making is that I can agree with some, if someone comes in and they're like, I think, you know, everyone should have guns. I'll be like, I agree. Yeah. 2 years ago, I didn't agree, but I changed my opinion after being
convicted. Maybe informed. You have conviction.
Yeah. Right. The point is there are a lot of people who are perhaps agreeable or disagreeable. The point is it's not about being disagreeable. Like, I'm not going to argue with you for the sake of arguing because I don't like you. That's tribalism where they're just like, Biden should win because Trump is bad. I'm like, no, Biden should win if Biden's got good policies, but Biden was sleeping on the job. I think
when he's saying disagreeableness, he means like specifically as like the big five personality.
Yes. Yeah. Jordan Peterson.
No. Okay. Yeah. So like just, being able to stick up for yourself and being willing not to just always go with the herd. Cause this is the thing, like human beings, we are individuals. And I think society sort of feeds us this line in the West that everyone's really, really individual and unique and special. But the truth is, we're also herd animals, and the majority of people always want to be in the majority. You are going back and talking about, would somebody have fought against slavery or fought against the Nazis, etc. The reason why those things were so difficult is because most people want to be in the majority. To go against the majority on anything is potentially risky and scary. And you can understand that because we're hardwired to be in tribes. So risking any form of social ostracization could have been deadly in the past. Now it's not so much deadly, but there's still potential real repercussions of that. And it's that that people fear. It's not that they are afraid to speak in itself. It's just simply that concern. What are other people going to think?
Right. Let's talk about these comedians. Okay. So, I highlight Jim Brewer, and he's fantastic. He's had very anti-woke bits. I think it was Jim Brewer had this bit about his daughter going to college and hating him. He's great.
Patriarchy.
Yes. He's awesome. Well, so he's like, I'm not going to do the shows.
Yeah.
Patton Oswalt.
Oh.
Did the opposite. He told the venues they have to and they said no. So he was like, well, then I'm pulling out.
Yep.
Well, then we have the in between. You have Joe Rogan and you have Tim Dillon. And I got into Twitter back and forth with Tim Dillon on this one.
Hot Tim on Tim action.
So Tim Dillon, on his podcast, his latest episode is him being critical of the federal vaccine mandates.
Okay.
He even criticized it on Twitter, but then said, I'm not going to cancel my shows at these events simply because I disagree. I wouldn't cancel my shows in Texas over the abortion bill passing. To me, that's an excuse. Joe Rogan is going to be performing at Madison Square Garden. He's already sold 13,000 tickets. Mm-hmm. He booked that before the vaccine mandate. Now he's offering refunds. I don't know the circumstances for Joe. Maybe he's got a very serious and massive contract and there's a serious liability for him bailing and canceling on the show. So offering refunds is probably a good thing. But I'll still say, based on the information I have, I don't understand why Joe wouldn't cancel that. If he's going to come out and say the vaccine mandates are bad, if he's going to, you know, go to the doctor and get prescribed these, you know, alternative treatments or whatever and not be vaccinated, wouldn't you then say, I will not support the system that is forcing regular people to get the vaccine? Mm-hmm. Like, even if you, in New York City, the vaccine mandate, there's an exemption for performers. Mm-hmm. If you are a celebrity, you don't got to get vaccinated. Okay. If you're a low level guitar player playing at a bar, you also don't got to get vaccinated. So, you know, I saw Tim Dillon tweeting about this, saying that like, he called his fans brain dead. He said, for my more brain dead fans, I'm not the one mandating anything. It's the venues and the ticket sales people and the governors. Blame them. And I'm just like, first of all, like, why you're calling people brain dead for saying, I get it. Maybe that's his style or whatever, but I'm like, he's already made this thing kind of, he's already coming at people because they were tweeting at him saying like, yo, why are you playing these venues? Let's be real. In New York City with the mandate, you can drive a half an hour upstate, find a better venue with no mandate. You can cross the river and find a venue with no mandate. If you want to perform in these places, you're choosing to do so. Mm-hmm. So it sounds to me like he's just making excuses for wanting to perform at bigger venues that make him good money. And that's fine. But then I just see a guy who's going to come out and take the position of, yeah, vaccine mandates are bad. Why?
Yeah.
Well, he got ratioed. I think his fans stepped in and then the ratio went back and forth. But you've got people saying like he's being called a sellout now.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever. Call him whatever you want to call him. I just think that if I were to go on a show like this one and be like, vaccine mandates are bad.
Yep.
You would not catch me dead putting on an event with a vaccine mandate.
Yep.
Just like, even if I didn't believe it, you know, why would I ever subject myself? No, but the reality is we're not going to do it. We are putting on an event. The tentative date is late October 22nd is our October 23rd, sorry. And then no vaccine mandates. It's going to be in West Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
Open, no masks, whatever, because I wouldn't do it otherwise.
Yep.
But I look at some of these people, and it kind of bums me out that Jim Brewer is, I don't think he's, he's probably wealthy. I mean, mm-hmm. he was an SNL, he's a famous guy.
Half-baked.
Half-baked. Yeah, for sure. He's a funny guy,
he's
too.
He's great, man.
So he's probably wealthy to a certain degree. I'm not going to pretend like he's the 1%. You know, Joe Rogan's estimated net worth is in the tens or hundreds of millions or whatever.
Yeah.
But how much is enough that you're going to be like, you know what? I don't need to make another 10 grand performing at this venue that's going to subject my fans who are upset about
this.
Well,
at this stage with hyperinflation, you could never maybe possibly, a sandwich could cost $100,000. So
yeah, but come on.
It comes to community. I mean, this is legit dude. Social currency is where we're going.
Sure. Ian, you get paid 10 grand, you put it in crypto, you put it in property, you don't lose the value because of hyperinflation.
If the banks knock your bank account out, you lose it. Like,
and the property is there with your name on the deal.
No amount of money is going to ever be enough. That's the point. It's people. You need people. You know, you need society. You need culture and friendship.
I understand that for some people, no amount of money is enough. And that's what I can't understand. Because I got
to
tell you.
Enough to survive, like $30,000 a year.
I think the 10 years ago, it was considered 77K. So look at inflation. I'd say you'd have to double it at this point. Maybe 125. In New York, it's like 200K a year.
Mm-hmm.
But I just don't get it. You know, look.
200K a year. Sorry, that's for what specifically?
Like to be considered perfectly middle class. You get vacation, you have clothes, you go to the dentist, you have healthcare. I just can't understand.
It's as high as 200K just to be considered middle class
in
New York
City. Yeah, so in New York City 10 years ago, it was 150.
High.
1,000 per year to be considered middle class.
That's okay. I didn't know it was that high.
For the rest of the country, it was 77. Yeah. So it fluctuates with cost of living.
Yeah.
Here's what I don't get. And it could be very simply that Joe Rogan has a contract with Madison Square Garden mm-hmm. that is probably massive. We're not talking about a little rinky dink club here. Mm-hmm. He could be on the hook if he severs the contract for like millions of dollars or whatever. But I'm just wondering, like, when you do a $100 million deal with Spotify and you were already making tens of millions of dollars, he's not going to get more. I mean, he can get more rich, but like, what do you do with the money? And he's not going to get more famous. So at a certain point, couldn't you just be like, I mean, actually, I'll tell you this. On Lex Friedman's podcast, Joe Rogan said he had FU money.
Yeah.
And that he just buys sports cars because, well, if you got the money and, you know, that's what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to be, okay, well, then stand up for your principles, say no to the vaccine mandate and tell Madison Square Garden you change the terms of the contract by mandating this. I won't perform.
Yeah.
What does he need from them? It bums me out.
I don't know, man. I mean, I feel like anything I would say on that would be speculation. You know, we've both been on Joe's show multiple times. You know, we've met him. Most people haven't. And I don't know. I mean, I know what I would do in that situation with the information that I know. As you alluded to, there could be something in there in a contract which is really putting him between a rock and a hard place. I don't know. So I'm kind of hesitant to speculate on that. I do think, though, that in terms of the general wider principle, then I do actually think it's extraordinarily important for high level musicians, comedians, performers, and so on to boycott this. If they do, look, some people don't.
Just real
go
quick.
Ahead, go ahead.
I want to say the same thing for Tim Dillon too. Yeah. Like, he booked his tour. He may be like, I can't pull out of these contracts.
Yeah.
So, you know, with respect, that could be the circumstance he's dealing with.
I mean, I know artists who are on, artists who are on a much, much smaller level who have canceled entire tours because of this. So again, I don't know all of the details. And these are guys who, you know, need the money far more than someone who's already worth $100 million plus. And they've pulled out on principle and said, you know what? I'm not going to perform at any of it. I announced that back in April or so, before there was even so much talk, let alone implementation of these vaccine passports. I said, look, I'm not going to perform at any venue where people cannot enter unless they show their papers proving that. I was like, it's never been like that before. I don't want it to be like that in the future. I'm not the biggest artist in the world. Like, I'm not going to crush the music industry by me doing that, but that's my line.
I think
that's my line. I'm not comfortable with
tying it with what you were saying earlier about how we're individual, but we're also herd animals.
Yes.
This is the point. When one very famous person makes that call and decides I'm not playing, people follow. That is how we're coded.
They do. And look, most people are against the mandate.
Well, if you go to CNN, they say 51% are in favor.
Nonsense. Most people are against the mandate.
I think so too.
Most people are against the mandate, whether people have had the shot. I know there's people who are super pro-vax who literally think almost everyone should get it, but they're like, but no, it shouldn't be mandated.
Yeah, because the mandate backfired.
Yeah. But not just that. It's just fundamentally, look, if the government can force you to inject something, even if you believe that that thing is good for you, right? The government shouldn't be able to, you know, vitamins are good for you. The government shouldn't be able to force you to inject vitamins. Exercise is good for you. I'm a huge proponent of exercise. I'm a huge proponent of healthy eating. The government should not be able to force you to go to the gym or to lift weights or to go for a run. All right. So you can be very much in favor of something, yet totally opposed to it being mandated on a state level or even on a massive corporate level.
Look at the people who supported Michael Bloomberg, voted for him in New York. This is a guy who says tax the poor. You ever hear a speech on this? He's like speaking at an event.
I don't think I heard
in
this
New
one.
York, and he's like, "You got to tax the poor because they're not smart enough to buy the things they need. So if we take their money from them, we can give them what they need." Wow. So he did the drink tax.
Okay.
You know, he tried to do the drink tax. I don't know if it actually he pulled it off, but he was like, you know, large sodas will be taxed at a higher rate.
Okay, yeah.
Trying to deter poor people. This is what they do. They do punitive taxes. Mm. We'll just tax the cigarettes, make it harder for them to get them because they're bad for you. Mm-hmm. Government shouldn't have anything to do with that. I will say there's a line. Schools and certain public facilities, institutions do require vaccination, like your standard, you know, MMR, polio.
I think that's unique to the USA, by the way.
Really?
Maybe not totally unique. I don't think that's the case in much of Europe.
There's that argument where, you know, Chris Wallace of Fox was like ragging on the governor of Nebraska. I was like, well, what about all these other vaccines? You know,
I'll just
say really simply, yeah. Yes, over years of research with long-term studies, we sat down and had a legislative body determine that we should have certain requirements for vaccines that are readily available and considered safe. And, well, there you go. Yeah. That's very different from an emergency use authorization edict coming from a governor who didn't pass the law through no conversation, no debate.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there should be an opportunity for hearings. There should be an opportunity for representation.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to sit back as Joe Biden circumvents the two other branches.
There's something really interesting that you perhaps inadvertently highlighted there, which is the concept of precedent. And that's the worst thing that's come out of the past 18 months
yes.
is the precedents that have been set, right? So I don't think even if there are other, it sounds like here in the US, there are other vaccine mandates for people to go to certain schools or I think to be in the military. Like, I actually oppose that, right? So just because they've made that decision in the past and set that precedent, to me, that doesn't mean okay, that this one's okay. I'm like, well, right. I don't think that's right either. And what's happened now is precedents have been set for lockdowns. Precedent have been set for stay at home orders, for forced closures of businesses, for forcing people. I mean, bro, I grew up in Saudi Arabia. I remember just 2 years ago, what was the thing that people always, oh, that's horrible. They make women cover their faces. Right? All of a sudden, you know, in France, in Germany, in the UK, they're debating back in 2015, 2016, should we ban the burqa? Should we ban the Islamic face veils, whatever? Now you're mandating the burqa and you're just calling it science.
You see the Met Gala?
Yes.
All the servants are wearing masks and all the elites aren't.
Yep.
The funniest thing possible. So a lot of people are ragging on AOC because she had this dress saying tax the rich at a $30,000 event. But I'll tell you what, the funniest thing I saw was the video of her leaving the event where everyone's cheering and screaming and she's waving as a staff member is carrying her dress from behind for her while wearing a mask.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, nothing says cyber nightmare dystopia like the leftist wearing a fancy tax the rich dress at a $35,000 per ticket event as everyone celebrates and cheers for her and her masked servant carries her dress for her on the way out. Amazing.
The thing is, dude, this has been happening all the way. Remember Gavin Newsom and his French laundry dinner? You had Barack Obama's birthday party recently. You've had these governors and mayors going on vacations and holidays. In the UK, there have been the scandals there too. And here's the problem, man. Pointing out hypocrisy is only effective on people who actually have principles.
Or scruples.
Right? Right? So if I do something that's deeply hypocritical, and someone points it out, I have to check myself, right? Because I have principles. I'm like, oh, you're right. You know, like I'm not practicing what I preach here, right? Like I did something wrong. But open there's no greater flex of power and authoritarianism than open hypocrisy. And we know this, right? Yep. Last year, I went to Romania for a couple months. And I was in Bucharest, where you have the second, a lot of people don't know, the second biggest building in the world after the Pentagon is the presidential palace.
Really?
In Bucharest, wow. Yes. Built by Nicolae Ceausescu.
Wow.
Their last communist dictator. Huh. So the building, I believe, was finished in 91. I think he was killed in 89, so he never lived to see the completion. This build, if you go inside this, the opulence, the decadence, keep in mind this is all built during the communist era, and you've got all the communist buildings around. He displaced over 20,000 citizens to build this building. So he demolished the homes of 20,000 people to create this monstrosity in the center of Bucharest, which he never even lived to see. But there's gold on the ceilings. There's over 1,000 rooms. There's 6 floors. When you see the building, keep in mind there's another 6 floors underground.
Ooh. Wow.
Right? The building is so heavy that it drops a couple centimeters.
What's it called?
Every year. The Presidential Palace in Bucharest. Look up this place. It's gigantic. I believe it's the second biggest building after the Pentagon in terms of overall floor space. This thing is... Jeez. It's insane.
What do they have? What does it do now? What do they use it for?
They use it a little bit for media. They do use it for some government activities. You can take tours of it, but a lot of it, I think, is just it's gigantic. Over 1,000 rooms. I mean, the size of this place is unreal. You walk in one room and it's like a football field.
I just watched the video of Ceausescu getting executed three weeks ago or four weeks ago, he and his wife. And mm-hmm. I mean, they were like up into the moment, up against the wall. And the woman was like, still like, you're the problem. You're mm-hmm. wrong. And they're wearing their nice clothes.
Yeah. It was on Christmas Day, I think, 1989.
It was televised. Yeah.
Yeah. Jeez. And I mean, look, we know this. You know that under communism, the rulers are, the rulers do okay.
Yeah,
the rulers are very wealthy. And they're living in luxury, and yet everyone else is starving and living in squalor.
So you think Ceausescu was like a prime example of a hypocrite?
Obviously. I mean, I think, as far as I'm aware, all the communist leaders were, right?
Definitely.
I mean, they were living lives of luxury and telling everyone else that, you know, they all need to be equal and have their rations and live in squalor and live in famine.
But they were convincing themselves that they needed the things that they were getting.
Yeah. I mean, so it's the same mentality, right? The same has happened. I mean, moving away from communism, just look at dictatorships, right? When you've had dictatorships, whether in parts of Africa or in the Middle East or in South America, the people at the top are bawling. They're 100 million billionaires.
Yep.
And meanwhile, people are just living in absolute squalor. You got something to say?
4 million square feet.
Ooh, there you
this
go.
Building.
Holy cow.
How many?
In Romania.
3,930,000 square feet.
Whoa.
Yeah.
How many floors was it again?
It's like
you said
a
six
city.
Underground.
I want to say it's about 12 floors, maybe.
Yeah, it's
something
footprint.
Like that.
It's a massive footprint.
It's huge. It takes an hour to walk around It takes an hour to walk around.
Wow.
The not just the bit like the perimeter.
I think that's bigger than my college campus.
It's
about the same size.
Huge.
It's like, State University.
It's huge.
Its volume is 2.5 million cubic meters.
Holy cow.
It weighs 4 billion kilograms.
What?
I'm glad they have these
9
analytics.
Billion pounds. 4.10 million tons. We often think about the biggest building vertically.
Yeah.
No, but this is...
It's huge.
Girthy.
Wow. Yeah,
well, yeah,
it's huge. If you ever go to Bucharest, like...
I'm going
that.
For sure.
Yeah,
it's worth checking this place out. And there's even tunnels. There's tunnels that go
of
from
course.
There to... Apparently, the tunnels underneath are so big, you can drive a tank through them.
They say it's the palace is worth 4 billion euro, making it the most expensive administrative building in the world. Wow. The cost of heating, electricity, and lighting alone exceeds $6 million per year, comparable to the total cost of powering a medium-sized city. Amazing.
Wow. One building.
So to your point, getting to openly flaunt the rules... That's what this is all about.
That's a power flex. I mean, what's a greater flex of power than open hypocrisy, right?
Yeah.
Telling people one thing and you're openly doing another.
I saw this photo. There's an article in The Spectator. It says COVID rules are for the serfs, not for the celebrities.
It's true.
And it's a picture of Kamala Harris' stepdaughter and some other actress or whatever. And I'm just like, bro, it's the capital city from the Hunger Games. And that's the one thing I hate the most, more than anything. Probably having grown up in the south side of Chicago, seeing all of the ultra well-off, hoity-toity people, and the people I knew from the suburbs who had good families and came from wealth. And I'm just like, I don't care if you're rich. I don't care if you got nice clothes. I care if you treat other people with respect.
Yes.
Seeing people mistreat waiting staff, seeing them mistreat janitors, seeing these the staff at this event all being forced to wear masks while they flaunt their wealth with their ridiculous costumes, I'm like, yo, these are the worst people.
It is. It's the same reason why Boko Haram or so as a are so annoying, right?
You're like waiting for that one. Right?
these woke people, they're so insufferable because they'll go on a rant about, you know, white supremacy and being anti-racist and whatever, and then a black person disagrees with them and they're the ones, you know, calling them racial slurs.
Yep.
Or they're the ones literally I've experienced it, right? They're the ones literally discriminating against people based on race. A few months ago, what was a big conversation here in the USA? What was it that was racist? Voter ID.
Yes.
Okay. Which is the least vaccinated group in the USA in terms of demographics?
Is it black people?
It's black people, right? Less than half the black people in New York City, I believe, have taken the shots. Okay. And now the same people who are saying that voter ID is racist are now pushing for vaccine passports.
No, it's vax, right? ID. You need an actual government
ID. Yeah, and you need an ID as well, right? Yep. So you need the proof of vaccination, and you need an ID. And you know that very disproportionately that's going to – you've effectively banned black people, most black people in New York City from restaurants, from gyms, from whatever. And this is the same people who less than a year ago are talking about voter ID being racist.
Yo, they're doing it right now.
Yeah.
You know, right now you've got the Republicans with the – they just passed the voter bill in Texas, which included a voter ID for mail-in voting. And they're like, it's racist.
Yep.
And so I tweeted, vaxxer ID is racist.
Yeah.
Now, I'll tell you, a lot of people were like, oh, you're so dumb. And I'm like, bro, what? I'm not talking about vaccine passports. I'm talking about vaxxer ID. Vaxxer ID is where in New York City, to enter a building, you need a physical state-issued ID with your picture on it. You also need proof of vaccination.
Yes.
But they're separate. So how are you going to sit there and be like, voter ID is racist? I'm like, I agree. Yeah. Vaxxer ID is racist too. And they're like, shut your mouth.
This is the thing. I mean, come on. Going to a $30,000 ticketed event wearing a dress saying tax the rich. Like, I mean, this is the thing. But the hypocrisy almost to someone like that, it doesn't even matter because they've got their legions of sycophants who no matter what they do and all this open hypocrisy, they're still like, yeah, this is great. Yeah, slay, whatever. And it's just like, that's why I just can't take these people seriously.
I look at when I first saw what AOC did, I didn't immediately jump on the like, oh, everyone's slamming her for going to the Met. I'm like, look, I got invited to the Clinton gala.
Sure.
And it was a black tie affair. And I said, I ain't going to wear a black tie. I'm going to wear a sweater and a beanie. And they said, you can't come. I said, then I'm not coming.
Yeah.
And so if they said I could, I'd be like, I'm showing up to this place with all these rich people and I'm going to wear my normal clothes. I got no problem. And so, you know, when I see AOC, she's like, I'm going to show up and I'm going to wear tax the rich. I'm like, to a certain extent, I would find that actually acceptable as a good form of protest to show up and be like in your faces. The problem is she wasn't there protesting.
No.
She was there enjoying her meal, celebrating and smiling with celebrities, waving to everybody.
Yeah.
And she was accepting a bribe.
Yeah.
I'm not going to mince words. AOC took a bribe. It was a $35,000 ticket. Now, how do they get around it? It's a charity event.
Of course.
So there's no real value, except us plebs can't. Well, I shouldn't say that. It's not fair. But regular people can't get in. I'm not going to sit here and pretend that I'm some like poor person who couldn't afford to go. No, the reality is I still think the elitism is a problem. And yes, even if I am well off, I'm still rather lefty on a lot of these issues. And I am disgusted by the hypocrisy of AOC because she is a faux leftist.
Yes.
She doesn't actually care about elitism. She wants to celebrate with these people. She wants to be one of them. She wants to be with them. How dare she have that man carry her dress in the mask? That sickens me.
Yeah.
Don't come to me and pretend like she was doing any activism. No, that was her excuse to be like, well, I was protesting. No, you weren't. Show up, pull the cloth off the table, knock over some drinks, give them the finger and say, I don't care for your stupid garbage events. Mm-hmm. You don't care about any of these people. Look what you're doing to all the staff and making them do while you don't wear masks. You're hypocrites.
Yep.
No, she didn't protest. No. She enjoyed her meal and she left.
And I think people also need to know that there's a difference between being an elite and being an elitist. right? You can have people who are elitists and they're not elite. They're not part of that class. And you can have people who are in the elite class. They're worth 100 million plus. They're billionaires, but they're not elitists, right?
So Joe Rogan.
Perfect example.
Great example.
He's not an elitist, right? He's an elite. Absolutely. By any sort of measure, he'd be considered an elite, but he's not an elitist on a bigger level. I would actually say that people like Trump for that.
Yep.
Right. Donald Trump is an elite. He's a multi-billionaire, right? He's not living like I said, but he's not an elitist who holds his nose and he sees these people in middle America and people in the working class. And he's just like, you know, insulting the, I mean, Don Lemon is an elitist.
Yep.
Right. He's not as elite as Trump, but he's an elitist, right? He will look down at an insult even on TV, half of the American population.
Oh yeah.
Perhaps more. Right. And that's why people like that are so insufferable, because it's not the fact that, oh, you've got money or you're successful. It's like, no, that's cool, but you can have money and be successful and not look down on humanity in general.
We need people like that. Those founding fathers were like that too.
Yeah.
The Democratic Party is the party of Globo Jim. You know Globo Jim?
Yeah. Globo Jim. Yeah, yeah.
We're better than you and we know it.
Yeah.
That's what I think of when I see them. Now, don't get me wrong. The Republican Party used to be the same thing until Trump kicked the door in and said, I'm having a well done steak with ketchup. And he got made fun of for it.
Yeah.
So that's actually such a good example.
You know? It really is. It's the perfect example. And Trump played the media so well because they made fun of him for doing it.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, regular middle Americans eating their, you know, garbage dollar steaks from the Save-On are like, why? This is how I like my steak. Yeah. Trump was trying to be a man of the people. He was trying to say to them, you know, look, I'll be like you. It's a common political tactic, mind you.
Mm.
But you look at what the Democrats, they've always tried to be the party of limousine liberals. Meanwhile, they claim Republicans, you know, they support cutting taxes for the billionaires because they think they'll be rich, but they're wrong. And it's like, bro, you do the exact same thing. You're sitting here with these celebrities going to the Met Gala where they have no COVID rules, and you do, and you're licking their boots. Maybe if you took the boot out of your mouth, you'd be able to smell and see what was going on, but you're smelling all their stanky feet. So what can I say?
No doubt. And it's the same reason why people find so much of Hollywood and celebrities just insufferable. It's not because they're rich or because they're famous or they're successful. Kudos for that. That's awesome. It's when they're sneering and looking down at and literally openly just mocking huge swathes of people, oftentimes people who have actually put them in that position of success, right? I mean, it's not that, oh, the only people who watch movies are wealthy elites. It's like, no, like everyone watches movies. Everyone plays video games. Different people read comic books, whatever. So when you have that audience and you're openly hostile towards them, it really rubs people the wrong way. And I don't know if maybe they do some of that unintentionally or if it's intentional, but I think that's part of what led to the backlash. I think, in 2016, both in the UK with the Brexit situation and with Trump, I think a lot of that was cultural backlash. It wasn't purely politics. Politics was a part of it. The economy was a part of it. But it's also just people like, look, I'm tired of you guys like just talking to us like that and treating us like that. So you know what? This guy ain't perfect or this thing ain't perfect, but we're going to go for that.
You know, I've been thinking more and more about I've always kind of felt this way. Like I mentioned, the elites at the Met Gala, the Capital City, the Hunger Games, and just like the snooty behavior. I've known people my whole life who just have this attitude of, I'm better than you and I know it. You've seen them all around and I can't stand it. I despise those people. And so when I see a lot of the high profile people who are supposedly opposed to that, who have massive wealth and then use that wealth to buy themselves stuff, infinity pools and condos and fancy stuff, I'm just like, why?
Rogan with his cars, because he wants it. It's his FU money. Do whatever you want with your money.
That's true. I completely agree with that. I just wonder why it is Joe doesn't just find somebody who's like advocacy. Maybe he is. I don't want to throw anything at anybody who's, you know, be it AOC or otherwise, who's donating and doing charity behind the scenes. Mm. You know, Hassan Piker bought, $3 million $3 million house. And they were like, why aren't you giving to charity? He's like, I am. I just don't publicize. I'm like, that's fair. Cause I give a lot too.
Mm-hmm.
But I just look into a lot of these people, Hassan included. You know, left or right, I don't care. If you're making millions of dollars, why aren't you building stuff with it?
Yeah.
So like we have this, you know, we have the vlog and we have the $1 million skate mansion, we call it. But like we've reached capacity basically on this house with how many people we're staffing and hiring, bringing people in and just being like, do your thing and make good stuff. And we're going to try and build something. And now we're looking at buying a venue because the goal is not to have money to buy, load up a garage full of sports cars or to get myself an infinity pool in a luxury a condo in DC or anything like that. I'm like, you know, I want to just hire people. It's not super easy to do. But my point is, I look at a lot of these ultra rich people buying yachts and stuff. I guess I get it. When you have so much money, it's like, what do you do anyway?
Yeah.
But it really is hard to manage. I just wonder why it is that there's so many people who are active in politics, who are extremely well off, who don't do anything beyond their shtick.
Because it comes down to their principles and values. You know, everyone has a different principles and a different value system. And I think that when it comes to money and power, I believe that those are primarily amplifiers, right? They're enablers. So if you are, you know, if you're naturally a fairly genuinely generous person who cares about like helping others and building and helping up, right? And you come into a lot of money or power, that will be amplified and you will then have the means to help. Oh, cool. I can help even more people now. I can build even more now, whatever, right? I think that's your position. But if you take someone, it's an amplifier, right? If you take someone who's a little bit of an alcoholic or a little bit of a drug addict and you give them like millions of dollars, what's going to happen, right? They become a major alcoholic. They become a major drug addict. If you take someone who's a little bit got authoritarian tendencies and likes to tell people what to do and bully people and whatever, you know, if they have not a lot of money, power and status, then they're kept in check because they don't have the capacity to do a lot of harm, right? So look at crazy dictators, whether you're looking at the Saddam Husseins or the Gaddafis or the Idi Amins, whatever, right? Those are people who then you give them essentially limitless power and funds and they can enact all of their crazy psychopathic stuff, right? Hitler wasn't the only Hitler out there. It's just he was the one who actually had the power and capacity to do that. And this is quite a dark thought, but there are millions of people who, if you gave them that same unchecked power, they would also commit genocide.
Which is
scary, but those people exist. They exist, but they don't have the power and the capacity to go about and do that. And so it's a little bit of a sobering thought, but I just think that's reality.
I think I have, you know, two thoughts on this. One is like, I don't understand why people who have money don't do more cool stuff. You end up seeing, typically it's something of the left. Mackenzie Bezos gets billions, and what does she do? She just dumps billions of dollars into critical race theory and social justice. And then, you know, you have some right-wing personalities and high-profile families that are wealthy and that fund a lot of stuff, the Mercers, the Koch brothers and things like that. I don't know what the Kochs are doing as of late. But
I think it's just one of them now, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. And so my point is there are a lot of very wealthy people who just choose to have whatever they want. And there's a tendency that we see on the left, hardcore political activism, Tom Steyer, Michael Bloomberg, George Soros, et cetera, Mackenzie Bezos, flooding the left with money, giving resources to all these people to support this stuff. And I don't think you have nearly as much on the right. And the same is true for the culture war. There are a lot of personalities who have moderately sized podcasts and YouTube channels that are making hundreds of thousands, if not millions plus per year, and they just put it in their pocket, put it in the bank, buy stuff for themselves and their family, and they don't invest. Meanwhile, you have left-wing activist organizations that, you know, the way I describe it is, you've got a game of tug of war where one side is pulling with all their might, the left, and the right is just trying to stay where they are.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not pulling back and you're just trying to stand, you're going to get knocked down. You're going to get pulled down.
Yeah.
So I've been thinking about this for a while. I'm like, if you're going to go out on YouTube, on iTunes, on Spotify, on Twitter, and be like, these are the things I care about. I demand blah. And you make a ton of money doing it. And then you're like, well, I'm not actually going to do anything about it. Mm. I question your integrity.
Yeah, it's complicated, man. And the thing with people who are more conservative is they're more conservative.
Yeah.
Right? People, like, they don't want to be, I mean, how many conservative protests do you see? Like, if you think of the concept of activism itself, it's generally thought of as a left-wing phenomenon, right? People on the left tend to be more willing to fight. They tend to be more bold in saying what they believe, even if some of it is absolutely insane. And I'm always trying to urge people who are just more, I would just say more sane, not even necessarily conservative or libertarian, whatever, even just sane liberals, just people who are sane. It's like, look, you need to push back at least equally, or you need to advocate for what you believe in at least equally. And if people say, oh, well, you know, we'll go to the polls in 2024. And, you know, as Andrew Breitbart said, you know, politics is downstream from culture. So that's why with what I do, I'm like, man, people need to focus more on the society and the culture. Like, we're both artistic people. So creatives, musicians, actors, whatever, people need to, it doesn't mean you need to go and create like a whole right wing economy necessarily, or like right wing everything. Just, you know, it's just those options have to be out there, because if all you do is play defense, you're always going to lose.
Right.
You're always going to lose. And there needs to be a level of just people going, look, okay, we need to draw some lines. This is, you know, this is reasonable. We need to push back against this. Otherwise, it's just going to be, you know, an ever-growing series of L's.
I think Breitbart had a good point when he said politics is downstream from culture. But I think, you know, I'm starting to realize that politics is irrelevant. Culture is everything.
Interesting.
The judges rule based on what popular culture tells them to rule on. Mm. So the interpretation of the Supreme Court is entirely based on mainstream narratives. So you can appoint all the judges in the world, but those judges, look, they'll throw Chauvin under the bus in 2 seconds. Kyle Rittenhouse, I'm willing to bet they'll throw him under the bus too. Why? Because they're scared of what the popular culture will do. Nobody wants to be ostracized. So if you don't have control of culture, then you can say, here's the law. The Constitution says the right to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Unfortunately, we don't have a strong gun culture in this country in that capacity. And I genuinely mean that because you have too many people who are gun owners who are willing to accept more and more regulations on their guns. Mm. So obviously people would say that's absurd. America has a massive and crazy gun culture. Sure. And they allowed for the NFA, and they allow for the ATF rule changing, and they allow for this over and over again. And the actual strong gun advocates are the ones always saying stop. Mm. No, but there's no political party looking to repeal all of these laws. Mm. You have the Democrats demanding more restrictions and the Republicans saying, no, wait, don't. So we don't have a strong enough culture in this country to resist the infringement upon our right to keep and bear arms. Mm. If the entire culture of this country was 100% on board with everyone owning a gun, there'd be no restrictions.
Sure.
Because the culture would dictate. Mm-hmm. Same thing will happen with free speech. So I've thought a lot about this. I used to say like, I understand the law on like, you can't incite someone to violence. Mm-hmm. I've actually been questioning that. You know, someone super chatted, we read it once, saying that it should be the action. The taking action of violence should be punishable and incitement should not be the crime because Congress shall make no law establishing, you know, freedom of speech or whatever. Mm-hmm. And that means you can say, I want you to go do X, but you didn't do anything other than say words.
Yeah.
If we allow the government to put a law on any words, then what's to stop them from saying there's already precedent to where we can make some speech illegal?
Mm-hmm.
The Constitution says you literally can't, but we've already allowed them to do it.
Yeah.
In which case, what's next? Hate speech laws?
No, you got to protect some slander and like calls to violence and things, because people are like brainwashable.
Mm.
The First Amendment is clear.
No, I understand. I've actually had this sort of internal debate with myself as well, with like, because I consider myself, you know, general. I mean, there's the positions of literal 100% free speech absolutism. You know, you can slander, you can incite violence, so on and so forth. I tend to think of myself as like one step in from that, as in like, okay, those fair exceptions, and then everything else provided it's, you're talking about, and it's because of what you're saying. So I agree that,
hate, you know, speech.
someone could tell me to go commit a crime or violent action or whatever, and I'm not an automaton, right? I ultimately am responsible for my own actions. I can't just be like, oh, well, he told me to rob that store. It's like, no, well, I'm the one who did it, right? But at the same time, see, this is the tricky one, because as we know, like now more than ever, human beings are, you can brainwash people. You can radicalize people. And, you know, Hitler didn't kill anyone himself.
I don't know. Did he?
Right? No, he himself, as far as I'm aware,
I don't know. He was in World War
I. In the first war, I think.
Okay, okay, okay.
I get your point.
Okay, when he was in power, he himself was not doing any of the killing. But
he wasn't known for that.
But here's the issue. Hate speech is incitement. Standing up on a soapbox, decrying maggots and plague rats, they're destroying this country. Something needs to be done. They need to be stopped now. Something needs to be done. You don't directly cross that line. But obviously their example of hate speech isn't saying maggots and plague rats. But when that's their argument the whole time has been hate. They've been saying this for years. Hate speech is incitement.
Yeah.
It should fall under the law. If the culture shifts in that direction, they'll start enforcing it.
So I'm not even I think the term incitement, I actually don't. I don't use that in my own definition of like limitations. To me, it would be direct calls to violence, right? Because incitement is too gray. It's too gray.
Well, incitement typically means telling someone, "Hey, go do X."
Okay. Well, yeah. I think that to me is where I'm like, okay, that's considered an exception. I believe under U.S. law. I mean, I think when it comes to free speech, the USA certainly has it the most rights out of any other country.
And the issue is, if the Constitution says they shall make no law establishing, pertaining to speech and religion and all that stuff, and then we say, oh, but you can.
Yeah.
Well, then the exceptions are, that means there is an exception, and that means, depending on the culture, more exceptions will be made.
And also, let's move away from it, calls to violence and incitement. What about, like, slander?
That's civil.
Right? What, so...
There has to be damages.
Yeah, but, you know, if someone is going around claiming that somebody is X or Y, or they've done this or they've done that, again, I can see, like, that is
It's not a crime.
It's not a crime?
It's not a crime. If I speak something, it's slander. If I write it, it's libel.
Okay.
And then I can file a lawsuit in a civil court where I say, you caused me damages by lying.
Yeah.
No one goes to jail. They just say, well, you know, you owe him for the damages you caused him. So it's one thing to say you will get arrested for incitement to violence. You can get charged with incitement.
Okay.
You can't get arrested for lying about somebody. You'll get sued, and then you'll have to pay up. And often it's extremely difficult to even do that. I've been lied about left and right. I'm sure you have too.
Yeah.
And what do you even do?
Yeah. I don't know. It's certainly an interesting conversation. It's one of those ones where I'm like, I don't know.
It's tough.
Yeah.
Tough moral question.
Yeah. It's a little bit tricky because I can see the sort of slippery slope argument. But also I think, okay, if you have essentially free speech absolutism and then you have those two caveats, I don't necessarily, if people are, you know, pushing for far, far, far more infringements, then obviously that's an issue. But I think, like, as it currently stands, I'm kind of like, fair enough, right? I'm not so ideological on it that I'm unwilling to kind of be like, okay.
So therein lies the main issue. So long as you have gun owners being like, okay, well, I understand this. In 10 years, they'll say, okay, well, I understand that. And then in 50 years, you'll have gun bans.
Yeah. Slippery slope is a very real thing. And incremental changes are a very real thing. But it doesn't mean that it always happens, right? So the truth is, with any law that we have, you're going to have everything sets a precedent, right? Every single thing sets a precedent, but it doesn't mean that it always goes as far as it theoretically could be pushed. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I see what you're saying. I think the Second Amendment is the perfect example of cultural erosion. I mean, we used to have gun clubs in high school.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now it's just like so many guns are banned and for ridiculous, nonsensical reasons.
Can I ask, what is it that switched your position on that? Because
I've never been
changed on, right?
I've never been a hardcore anti-gun person.
Okay.
I've always been I think there's reasonable things we can do to, you know, this was a few years ago, reasonable things we can do to, like, you know, maybe track purchases and maybe require insurance or something, because we're talking about a deadly weapon. Mm-hmm. And then someone commented on one of my videos saying, I completely agree. I would also like you to get speech insurance for your First Amendment right. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, that's a good point. If we're talking about your rights that can't be infringed upon, I might disagree with you owning the weapon in certain capacities, but I certainly don't have the authority to legislate that away unless we have a constitutional convention and change the amendment. And then I shifted to, okay, well then I think if the left wants to change the gun laws, they got to have a convention to change Second Amendment. Mm-hmm. And everyone's like, okay, that makes sense. Fine. It'll never happen.
Yeah.
And then it basically came down to, when the riots were getting crazy, when COVID was getting crazy, and I started saying, okay, I'm going to go buy a gun. Mm. Someone tried to break into my house. And then I actually started training with them, learning about them, using them, and then being like, everything the left has said about guns is completely wrong. They're lying. Mm. Mm. They're either lying or they're completely idiotic, but they're 100% wrong. Mm. When they say things like, no one's banning your guns. Bro, I have like 20 guns that are already banned in like 15 states.
Yeah,
they're banning guns.
Yeah,
absolutely. Not to mention the NFA making it damn near impossible to even get them. And then the ATF changing rules. So some guy goes out and buys a weapon. And then 2 months later, the ATF changes the rule. And how's he supposed to know? Then they go kick his door and arrest him because he has an illegal weapon. Nah, we can't have that. But we can have Super Chats. We got to go to Super Chats.
Yes, so we can.
If you haven't already, smash the like button. Subscribe to the channel. Go to TimCast.com. Become a member because we're going to have a members-only segment coming up at 11 or so p.m. Let's read some of your Super Chats and see what y'all have to say. Just real quick, because someone super chatted right now and it's relevant. They said, First Amendment protects expression of opinions and beliefs. Calls to violence are not an expression of an opinion or belief. 1A does not have exceptions. All right. Let's see what we got here. Pugin says, would pursuing a career in federal law enforcement still be worthwhile? Or have things gone too far politically? My dream is to work for the FBI, but I'm worried that wokeness has hurt its efficacy. Me personally? Yeah, watching X-Files is fun, you know? Like this, it's not even about Mulder chasing aliens. It's about, they actually show the FBI as some like noble profession of stopping murderers and there's like serial killers, but I'm like, it's all a dream, man. Look, I'd be willing to bet that wokeness has infected and infiltrated everything. So me personally, I'd say, I wouldn't do it. All right. The Curly Afro says, Zuby, great book. Almost finished my dietary plan. Doing 80-20 first time up. Tim and crew, keep up the great work. And Ian, read Meditations by Marcus Aurelius.
Yes. Ooh,
and Miyamoto Musashi's Dokodo.
Yes. Both. Oh, thank you. Absolutely. Solid second.
Nick H says, healthcare is not a right. The far left on Twitter is telling us this when they want vax mandate because they're angry unvax using up beds in hospital. That's right.
Yep.
They say healthcare is a human right unless you don't do as you're told. Mm-hmm. In which case, what?
I see how this works.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
The principle is whatever is expedient at the time.
Indeed.
Yep. All right. Let's see. Insert name here says, Tim, a new AFT director is not appointed within the next 23 days. Rule 34, Article 2, Clause 2 of the Constitution states the Speaker of the House may appoint nominees to any vacant position. Google Speaker. Get out of here. That's it. That, you got me. I'll give you that one.
You put AFT too, right? Not ATF.
Well, AFT is because Biden says AFT, that's but they funny. they were pranking us. they were pranking us.
Smart.
I fell for the prank. You got me. I didn't read the last part though.
Good face.
I know the rules of the internet. All right. Let's see. Let's find ourselves a nice. Here we go. What does it say? Crom Mike says, let's be clear. Using military to escort children will allow them access to take your children at any time. All they need to do is make it the new normal and then give them the order. They will give you something to lose, your job, your children, and your life. That's what I'm saying, right?
Yeah, but I don't think you should live in fear of the National Guard like that, personally.
I just think it's one degree at a time. It's not like no one's ever going to come out and be like, the National Guard will be taking your children from you. They're saying, I'm sorry there's no bus drivers, but the National Guard will come here to help. And then something will happen and they'll say, your kids were brought to a special facility because of the threat level from COVID, but they'll be back tomorrow. You know, it's not going to be overnight. They don't do, that's not how it works.
Hmm. Homeschool your kids.
Yes. Homeschool your kids.
Yes. Yep. It's a precedent.
I'm done with that. Mm-hmm.
Michael Smith says, last Airbender taught us about neutral Jing. Sometimes the best thing to do is nothing and wait to see how to respond properly. In fact, we were just talking with Dan Holloway the other day, and he was mentioning that a really good interrogation technique is after someone answers you to not say anything because people hate silence, so they'll just start talking again, mm-hmm. and yes. they'll give you more and more information.
Yes. You know who's really good at that? Norm MacDonald.
Oh, snap.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to watch him.
Yeah, dude. It's great. Norm was a genius. Sergeant Wolf says, Tim, not all Gen Z are socialists. Many of us are outvoiced on social media because we're not there to be activists. Much like how not everyone is not on Twitter, is everyone in the world. I'm a far libertarian, not a Nazi.
Mm.
Well, there you go. All right, let's see where we're at. Tony Mathis says, Tim, you're analyzing the problem from a leftist viewpoint. Seeing your parents struggle makes kids want to help. If in no other way, that's not causing that, no other way, that's not causing more problems. If there is love in the family. I'm just saying there's a lot of leftists who are talking about how they grew up in this collapsed economy with constant struggle. They go to school and they have massive debt and there's no jobs for them. And now there's another collapse and they're just totally nihilists.
I want to ask you guys about that. So you were saying there's this, I guess you call it cowardice culture. And then, Tim, you were saying people are like kind of coming out without calluses and they're raw to the environment and it's hurting them. How do we I would imagine the only way we can help them is over time develop beatings. Helping them until the beatings stop. Yeah. Until the beatings stop. Wait, how does it?
Until the morale improves.
You need to help them. You can't really callus them because then they're going to take it personally and attack you for it. But you got to encourage them to start to take calluses or to callus themselves. I mean, that's kind of what you do for a living, basically.
Look, you have to – resilience is built over time.
Exposure.
Right? That's literally how you learn anything, and it's how you get stronger. It's how your immune system works. It's how you build muscle. It's how you get fitter. Everything. It's incremental – small incremental gains. So I think you want to encourage children, teenagers, young adults – to challenge themselves, go outside their comfort zone. It's why, you know, something as simple as playing in sports is so important because you learn how to win, you learn how to lose, you learn how to get along with a team and how to have an opponent, but not necessarily deem them an enemy, right? A lot of people now can't differentiate between an opponent and an enemy, right? And I think that's kind of dangerous because people see the other side as a threat, as an existential threat. It's like, no, that can be your political opponent or someone you disagree with. It doesn't mean you have to hate them or want them or wish physical harm on them, right? That's messed up. But a lot of people haven't learned that. And I think I see a correlation between this and I've made this point before where I see a genuine correlation between like people playing sport or being physically active and their sort of socio-political outlook on a lot of these things, right? People who have built themselves up or they've faced some kind of like true challenge or adversity, whether just by their environment or self-determined, then they carry that over to other aspects. It's rare to find someone who is physically strong, who is like mentally weak, who is throughout this pandemic, is there anybody jacked who's afraid of COVID?
I don't think so.
There's nobody jacked who's afraid of COVID, right? That's not accidental. Like, honestly, like that's maybe I have some confirmation bias, but like I'm observing who it is and what's going on. And it's like the same people who freaked out about that. It's the same people who freaked out about Trump, same people who freaked out about Brexit, same people who freak out about climate change. It's the same people who are freaking out over COVID. It's like the same.
Do you know about the attractiveness phenomenon with the political parties?
I do, yes.
Yeah, Republicans tend to be more attractive than politicians, not individuals. Boy, did the Young Turks get mad at me for this one. Yeah. It was really funny. So I had mentioned this because there's like six studies pointing out that people who are Republican politicians tend to be more attractive. Mm-hmm. You can see it at CPAC. And then I cited the studies. So they did a segment making fun of me, calling me ugly, and then saying I was right. I'm like, that's just brilliant. The weirdest thing.
I guess you win.
Yeah, I was like, I wasn't even being mean. Yeah. I was just like, yeah, I think the point I was mentioning was, and it's funny, this shows you the tribalist nature of like the Young Turks. The point I was making is that people who grew up beautiful are privileged and that they have better access to things. People want to help them more often. And they're like, if I could pull myself up by my bootstraps, why couldn't you?
Yeah.
And people who are frumpy and ugly have a hard time of life. And they're like, we need collective resources because life is not easy. And so you have beauty privilege.
Mm-hmm.
And they criticized me for it and called me ugly. It was really weird.
You're not ugly, Tim.
I don't care what they think. I'm just like, I'm pointing out like the nature of their argument is he's right, but he's ugly. And I'm okay.
Oh, I can't stand ad hominem attacks when they go for.
I'm not a fan.
Yep.
But you learn to expect them because that's all some people are capable of. It's their only line of argument. And the problem is that it works on so many people, right? So many people, if you just call them a name or you call them some ist or ism, that or phobic, then they shut down. They immediately go on the defensive, and once you've got them on the defensive, then you've kind of won. So I can see why people use this tactic, but I think people need to stop falling for it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I did it in my 20s a lot on YouTube. I would make videos at people and go for their physical weaknesses and like make them feel insecure about it so that then I could prove my point easier against them. It was horrible. Like, I seeded this stupidity.
Yeah. All right. Josh Denny is an Uber driver, says, yesterday Biden stopped in Boise. Over 2,000 people peacefully assembled to shout F Joe Biden. Huge shout out to Idaho Dispatch for doing the honest journalism we need. Check out their channel for a stream of the whole event. Support great honest journalism. I heard that people were shouting F Joe.
National chant now. Wow.
All right, let's see. Matthew Hammond says, can we get Zuby and Clifton Duncan on the show while Tim and Ian's mics are muted?
I was thinking of those two.
Technically,
so
yes.
You just want a show with Zuby and Clifton Duncan?
Does it have to be in this room? I mean, I'll go wherever.
They could just do a podcast. Yeah. You know? That's what you want if you want to listen to.
Yeah. I have done a podcast with him. He has been on my show.
He's all right. Great. Yeah,
he's cool. What they're basically saying is they refuse to not watch Timcast IRL, but they want that. So they'll only watch it if
can
we're
Lydia
here.
Still like turn the cameras to me and Tim sometimes?
Can I talk? I don't know what the rules are here. Yeah.
Ready to Rumble says Jim Brewer's Twitter is inundated with people that are hating on him. Check it out. I'm not so sure Jim Brewer cares.
Good. He shouldn't.
See, he seems resilient, and he's repeatedly called them out. He's probably laughing. You know who else is awesome is Rob Schneider.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's got awesome. Norm in him, man. I was watching him talking about the crew, him and Sandler, and yep. And the way he was talking, you know, Norm has got like the guy. I don't know if I can jump in. Norm, you know, I can't do a Norm right now, but Rob was doing it. It was just in him. They're
friends, man. Yeah. They were at the same time period and they believed in, being able to tell jokes and stuff, you know?
And they're like, you know, get the thing.
Yeah. I love Rob Schneider's Twitter. He calls people out. He doesn't,
I gotta look him up.
He's fearless, you know, right on. All right, let's see. Daniel,
we haven't talked about it, but the Nicki Minaj thing's been interesting. If you've caught that,
yes.
Oh yeah, the media lies about Nicki Minaj. She says y'all are lying, and then someone says she's on the side of the far right. Yeah, it's like what they lied about. All right, let me read this. Daniel Lipscomb says, "Hey Tim, I'm 29 and need $8K for a hip replacement. Worth asking if that money is really burning a hole in your pocket. It's probably one way to put it. If you had a GoFundMe, I'd go check it out. 29 and needing a hip replacement. That sounds bad.
That's
I've given away a ton of money to GoFundMes for pets and for people's medical issues and people who've had their homes destroyed in the wildfires. So I'm not necessarily a big fan of just giving money away because I want to make sure we have resources to hire people, pay people well, and expand the company. But at a certain point, like, I see a story about someone whose house burned down. And I'm going to be like, yo, I'm not going to leave this person hanging.
Yeah.
You know, there was someone who got attacked by Antifa and had their equipment destroyed. And I was like, here's money. Go buy yourself some new stuff, man. I can't.
Good.
Like, you know, I'm not going to. It's tough, you know. Yeah. But I think we're going to do some great stuff. And, you know, we've got the funds to hire more people, more people. The more people who sign up and become members at timcast.com, the more we're focusing on hiring people and expanding. The challenge is, you can't just go into the list of resumes and be like, hired, because you end up with a bunch of people who can't do the job, and it's like an arduous process.
Yeah.
Yep.
The last thing ever is I cannot stand the idea of firing someone is like, wrecks my mind. I can't stand it. You gotta vet people so deep before you hire them, in my opinion.
To fire someone.
Especially because we have to move people out. If we hire someone and they're like, okay, their resume looks good, they look good, okay, we're going to hire you. We'll fly people out. We'll check their vibe. Okay, now you can move out here and join the company. And then something happens where it's like,
yeah,
it's like a long vetting process. It's not easy. All right, let's see. Clef the Misfit says, Tim, you're asking whether it's incompetence or malice. But it's like Zuby said, these people are children. Children are both ignorant and malicious. These traits feed into each other.
Mm.
Yeah.
Maybe so.
Corey Richmond says, Zuby, being from the UK, what is your stance on gun rights?
I'm very pro-2A. I don't advocate for it in the UK because it just wouldn't work and doesn't make sense. And there isn't the cultural and historical precedent for it. But I think that Americans absolutely, if the past 18 months has not made this clear to you, then you've been living under a rock. But Americans should absolutely never give up their Second Amendment
rights. But why shouldn't the people in the UK get the right to keep and bear arms?
it just wouldn't work. It wouldn't work. There's not the historical precedent. Like, if you even advocated for that in the UK, you'd be considered like extreme far right.
Mm. Yeah.
It's so far outside of the cultural and political window.
You gotta start pushing the window.
Well,
that's, and the people don't want it, right? It's not like the people want, if British people were generally like, yeah, we want gun rights, then you could bring it into the political discussion, but the vast majority absolutely do not.
So you change the culture.
Yeah, the concept would horrify them. But that would be hard to do. I mean, America's got several hundred years of culture and history with that. Partially because of the British, right?
Yeah. Thanks for that.
Partially. So, yeah, partially. So it's kind of different.
Derek Nelson says, love seeing Zuby. He probably doesn't remember me, but I lived on the Dammam Street in UDH, Saudi.
Wow.
Growing up over there does give a different perspective. Tim, thanks for helping me get through last year. Ron was right. And the Fed. Do you remember Derek Nelson?
The name rings a bell, you know. Huh. Where I lived was only like 1,400 people.
Do you know
name rings a bell.
Dammam Street?
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely.
What is UDH?
Udalia. It's where I used to live.
Oh, wow.
In Saudi Arabia.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah, cool. Tiny, tiny community.
Very yeah. cool.
Do you get into crypto?
Yeah, I've been in crypto since 2017.
Oh,
nice. Yeah.
Good year. Squall for crypto, you know, to be in it. Squall thinks, says, there's wisdom in Joe Rogan not using his platform to make a statement about what should be limited to the conversation between doctor and patient. All right, I hear that. Joe Sosnowski says, that's not how you pronounce vitamins.
Vitamin.
Yeah.
Vitamin.
Vital mineral.
I abstain. You're both right.
Yes, everyone Zuby, wins. That,
vitamin is short for vital mineral.
No, it's not.
You get it right.
Yeah, it is.
No, it's not. That's a total lie.
Vitamin?
Then why would you have vitamins and minerals?
What?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Vitamins and minerals are different.
Looking vitamin etymology.
Vitamin's not short for anything. It's
We're
just
looking
vitamin.
It up.
Here we go.
I will happily concede if I'm wrong.
Originally,
I don't think vitamin is short for anything.
Vitamin with an E on the end, apparently, 1912, coined by the Polish biochemist Kazimierz Funk, from Latin vita, life. Hold on, I gotta look up the entire article to get the rest of that.
Yeah, vita's life.
Vita. Oh, yeah. Gosh. Vita from pi root, gue to live, amine.
Ah,
vita like amine.
Like you're proteins.
Right. I stand yeah. corrected.
Oh, because they were thought yeah. to contain amino acids.
Life
there
amines.
We go. Yeah.
So vita amine.
Yeah, I was going to say, because it wouldn't make sense, because you say vitamins and minerals.
Mm-hmm. We don't say that.
You don't say that?
Oh, we do. Yeah,
vitamins and minerals.
Yeah, so if vitamin like included minerals, then the second half would be redundant.
Aha,
right.
I've been defeated. I've lost
okay.
control.
Okay.
Nice.
Waffle Sensei says, Zuby is effing based.
Oh.
Yes.
Thanks for the super chat.
Thanks. Don't know what to reply to that.
All right, let's see. Mark Roberts says, AOC Met Gala. How's the farmer's bed? Animal farm reference.
Some animals more equal than others.
That's right.
Yeah, do you think she's like, she broke through the wall and now she's emanating like tax the rich from the inside? Because I think that's what she thinks she's doing.
I think she's cosplaying as a revolutionary because when there were revolutionaries in France, they did not wear things that said down with, you know, the rulers. They just did it.
The chat is like, Tim is done. Zuby wins. Zuby got him. He got me. Triumph over. Ben Walker says, Tim, there's criticism for your presence and self-censorship on YouTube, big tech censorship, and your criticism of Tim Dillon. Is it possible that his rationale may be the similar, but the ends are different? If not, a distinction might be helpful. Yes, they're very different things. First of all, when I was talking about the vaccine mandates and people were like, yeah, well, you're on YouTube and YouTube censors. And I'm like, if the bars in New York were like, we have a vaccine mandate, but if you show up, we'll let you in anyway. Okay. If they were operating a speakeasy behind the scenes, that'd be like, okay. If we have a show on YouTube where there's like some things we can't say, they're typically slurs we don't want to say anyway. Okay. And for the most part, our opinions on the show don't really fall outside of YouTube. The issue is, we want to have guests on who do have opinions outside of that of YouTube. So we created a private space on timcast.com. We can do our show, express ourselves. There's nothing we're particularly worried about for the most part, but we created a space where we can be safe. It's not the same. I think it's fair to say, you know, there's some criticism in get off YouTube, but why would you sacrifice the largest video platform where you can say 99% of the things you want to say and then use that to push people to a space that insulates us from all censorship just makes sense. In regard to Tim Dillon, he could book a venue that doesn't mandate vaccines. He could book a suburban New York venue, right? So it's not one for one. I welcome a discussion on it and criticism. And as I pointed out, with respect, Tim Dillon may already have contracts in place. He can't just break those. And so he's probably like, yeah, I don't know what to do. So I can respect that. I just think, for me, I'm like, censorship is bad. We're going to create a space where we can speak out against censorship. And there's a line. If it ever came to the point where YouTube told me I wasn't allowed to say something very important, like, you know, Joe Biden should be impeached because he's a crooked politician who was colluding with Ukrainians in Burisma so that he could get an investigation pulled on the company that his son worked for. If they came out and said, if you mention that again, we'll ban you. I'd be like, I'm going to say it. In fact, when it came to that one guy's name who you can't say, I actually had I got a huge fight with YouTube over like, if you push this, I'm going to upload 6 videos per day just saying his name, nothing else. And then ultimately I was like, there's a limit. Is it really worth it for me to argue over saying one name? The issue isn't black and white. I don't need to say a name. I can put it on my website and I can use the funding and the resources to have an impact. My understanding is that Tim Dillon isn't actually advocating against the vaccine mandates. He's actually arguing that they're okay because some people want them. He said, I'm not going to cancel my show because half the people who like me don't like the mandates. And I'm like, right. So he's just supporting the mandates while then saying they're bad. It's not one for one. I disagree with what he's doing. You can disagree with what I'm doing. It is what it is. All right. Seriously, JK says, weeks ago you made fun of my comment about a vaccine passport black market that will form. And here we are. It already started. Also, check out the video Daily Wire put up about global clashes and protests. It's getting wild. It absolutely is, mm-hmm. Especially with parents. There was I covered the story. Bannon was right. I'll say it again. They canceled these meetings, these school board meetings in one area because parents were attacking the school board employees.
Wow.
Because people are not having it, you know. Yep.
That's what happens when you push people that far, though.
Especially with our kids.
Yeah.
Do you have kids? You know? Do you have family?
No, not yet. Not yet. I want to have at least 5. But yes.
Nice. Great number.
Not just yet.
All right. Let's see. We'll try and grab where was more? C-Squared says, Tim Dillon, best Tim, insults everyone under the sun. Look out for the beanie bash. He's going to dress you down like a Taco Bell bathroom, Tim Pool, you dim fool.
Now we talking.
You know. Okay.
That's a lot of memes inside there.
So Tim Dillon on Twitter called his fans brain dead morons.
Ouch.
So then I quote tweeted him saying something like, sometimes, you know, there's no medical exemption for vaccine mandates in New York. Sometimes it's good to be part of the wealthy elite, right, Tim? He then took that and made fun of me for being bald. So then I called him a coward. That's the extent of like, you know, for the most part. If you want to have a serious political conversation and you want to entertain conversations around politics and you don't know what you're talking about and you're scared, don't come up in my grill. Don't insult your own fans as brain dead morons and then rebut me by saying I'm bald, because if you can't hang with hardcore political conversations, you shouldn't be in the business. That being said, the dude probably will roast me. It'll probably be really, really hilarious. And the dude is very funny. I would never dream of getting involved in a roast contest with a guy who's as funny as Tim Dillon. I can respect that, but I can't respect you publicly coming out on your latest episode saying vaccine mandates are bad. But I have no problem performing at venues that do them because I don't care that much. And then when your fans come out and say, yo, dude, this is selling out. And you say, well, you're a brain dead moron. I'm like, dude, that's like lowbrow. Okay. I'll criticize that. He can say whatever he wants about me. Hassan says stuff about me. All the leftists do. I'm not going to cry about it. I'm just going to talk on the internet, I guess. All right. JM Kid says, great guest tonight, Tim. Zuby is interesting. I will have to follow him on Twitter. That's right. People should follow you on Twitter. What's your Twitter?
No doubt. At Zuby Music. Z-U-B-Y Music.
Mm-hmm. Sergeant Sponge says, Tim, take it easy on comics. They say things to be funny. That's it. There are no other rules if someone laughs. Joe and Dylan don't have to wear politics front and center. Yeah, they don't. I'm not saying they do. What is it? I mean, comedians are entertainers.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, they're here to make us laugh. You know, they're not here to challenge the system or ruffle feathers like George Carlin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that you wrote that, like George Carlin. Right. Yeah, calling yourself a comedian is not a badge to be an idiot. You still got to back up your words with your actions.
George Carlin got arrested for his bit. Mm-hmm. To stand up, he was, yeah, but you know, maybe he was just more than a comedian.
What did George Carlin get arrested for?
7 words you can't say on TV.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that.
We had a bit on the Members Only podcast where we just repeatedly said the 7 words.
I never knew he got arrested for that.
He got arrested for it. I didn't know that. He got in a lot of trouble for it. Okay. He was willing to say, I will sacrifice my freedom for what I believe in. Mm. So that's why I'm just like, you know, look, Joe's a friend. He's a good guy. But I just don't understand how he can come out on the show and be like, hey, all these things are really bad. We shouldn't do this. But I've got no problem supporting a city and a venue that does it.
Oh, man. Cancel that MSG show, dude.
It's his deal.
Oh, I want to start cussing right now.
it's really easy without knowing the full details.
Yeah, that's true.
I'll say this for Tim Dillon, too. You know, I want to make sure I'm being fair because I don't know his contracts. He's got a big tour. He's got a bunch of venues. Yeah. He might not be able to. I worked for Fusion. Here's the one thing I think is acceptable that you can say about me. I worked for Fusion. I worked for them for 2 years. They were woke and insane. And I tried to leave, but I had a contract, so I couldn't. So I was stuck with the company for an additional year while they made all this stuff. And then finally, once my contract was over, I walked. Right? So to be fair, sometimes you can't just walk away because they'll try and destroy you, you know? Mm. So, all right, let's see what we got here. One more. Kyle Abrams says, hey, Tim, would you be interested in hiring a chef, groundskeeper, housekeeper local to your area or letting someone intern? The answer is yes. A groundskeeper would be greatly appreciated and needed. I'm not sure about housekeeper. I think we have, I mean, you know, you could help out. You can send an email to jobs@timcast.com and then we'll get to it, you know, to the best of our abilities. Quality control is difficult because I can't just be like, hey, you go hire someone because then it takes a long time and so you'll figure it out. But anyway, if you haven't already, smash the like button, subscribe to the channel, go to timcast.com, become a member. We're going to have a members only segment coming up talking about naughty words, things that YouTube doesn't like. And I mean, they're usually not that crazy or anything like that. But you can follow me personally at Timcast. You can follow the show at TimcastIRL for a bunch of clips. Zuby, you want to shout anything out?
Yeah, sure thing. So my new album is out right now, Word of Zuby. It's available on iTunes, Apple Music, Spotify. I've also got my own podcast, Real Talk with Zuby, which is available on all the major platforms. And you can find me on all social media at Zuby Music, Z-U-B-Y Music.
That was cool, man. I thought we could have had like talked about a lot of different strata of evolution and consciousness and like culture and stuff. But this was like, that was great.
It's all good, man. Yeah, I'm here.
It's rock and roll, baby. Hey, find me at Ian Crossland anywhere. Check you later.
I'm being forcibly instructed to tell you that you're the world's best female weightlifter, which was how I first heard about you. You were smashing the boundaries of gender.
Hey, you know, someone had to break that glass ceiling.
That's right. And I really appreciate that about you. Yeah. Thank you.
That's all good. I'm glad I did it for women worldwide. That's
right. I respect you as a fellow woman.
Smash the patriarchy.
Thank you, ma'am.
But now you're a man again, right? You identify as a man again?
That's a little bit presumptuous of you.
Oh, yeah, I agree.
Well, there's a question mark at the end of that statement.
Yeah, and I don't know why you're making it seem that it's just a binary.
You're twisting my period.
All right, we'll get into it in the member segment. We got a story a challenger emerges. Did you shout out your?
I didn't mean to throw everything off. I just wanted to say that you're the best female weightlifter.
Thank
in the
you.
World.
I appreciate
you guys
it.
Are welcome to follow me at Sour Patch Lids on Twitter as I attempt to gain more followers and Sour Patch Kids.
We will see you at timcast.com for the members only segment. Check it out. Thanks for hanging out.
Bye guys.